program going. Okay. All right. Let me turn that down, I guess. Now, what I was referring to there was the one, the email you sent out. It was referring to a site is called 911weknow.com. What you had in the subject line was 9/11 mystery, Sophia small storm, fluorine, fluoride, and the destruction of the WTC. So what were the major points about that subject?
Okay, yes. Well, I think this really sort of perfectly illustrated what has been happening with the issues, you know, related to Dr. Judy Wood's research, because, you know, the thing that seems to stand out when you get to a certain position of knowledge over this research is that there are a number of established figures who claim to be 9/11 truth researchers or, you know, who care about 9/11 truth. But then they start acting very strangely when, you know, you try to make them aware of what Dr. Judy Wood has posted. And, you know, I've had this quite heated discussion with some of my, I have a few contacts over here, a few friends, and they, you know, are quite well versed in the goings on, you know, with Hurricane Erin and the Hutchinson effect.
Yes,
when I point out, hello?
Oh,
people like,
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I think I've just got a little bit of, you know, internet breakup at this end, but that's okay. I can hear you fine, mainly.
And I guess I did, I hope I pointed out that you are calling us up, or if you're calling us from the UK, and I guess it is 5 hours. Now, there was a little confusion, sorry off the subject here, but somehow I was listening to the BBC, and they were saying, they were adding 4 hours. They give a time GMT, and then they add 4 hours or subtract 4 hours for the East Coast. But, you know, whatever is going on there, daylight savings or something. Okay.
Well, we're also on daylight saving time.
Okay.
So we're an hour ahead of GMT at the moment.
Okay.
So, you know, we do daylight saving time here as well. British summer time. But going back to this thing with muddling up the 9/11 truth issue. Or the evidence, really. You know, I think we've each got to look for the truth ourselves. And so Sophia made this film called 9/11 Mysteries, Demolitions Part 1, which, you know, got heavily promoted, linked on many, many websites. I myself gave out probably a couple of hundred DVDs of this a couple of years ago, you know, over a period of time. Before I realized, you know, what Dr. Wood had come up with, before I became aware of that. So we have Sophia actually selling a DVD on her website of the Madison Conference, which is Dr. Wood's presentation of all the world-based central evidence and how, you know, there's almost no evidence of high heat. There's very strong evidence that most of the steel turned to dust, which is one of the key factors in all of this, because we don't know really of a mechanism which can turn steel to dust.
Yes, exactly.
You know, yeah, I mean, explosives don't do it, nuclear explosives don't do it, because we're back to heat. And the issue of heat and dust, you know, if you just focus on those two particular things at the World Trade Center and look at the evidence,
and
that will guide you, you know, to a different conclusion and a different method. Of how they destroyed the towers.
Well, Dr. Judy Wood's point of the Alka-Seltzer effect is actually just we could say brilliant observation, but a lot of this, like you're saying, check the evidence. You just have to step back and look at it. The towers are turning to dust in a manner that would be comparable if the towers were made of Alka-Seltzer and they were dunked in water. They simply float up. They do not come down, and afterwards we have no wreckage, basically.
That's basically it, yeah. I mean, it does look like there's some processes triggered off, as you say, very much like a tablet being dropped into a glass of water and then, you know, fizzing up. And as you say, some of it does go down. You put the tablet into the glass and some of it will go down. But also some of it goes up. but it wasn't in a sort of huge, massive explosive. It was more in a foaming type of effect.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Woods used this analogy with a sort of drinking water fountain or a bubbler, I think she calls it.
Okay.
So all these things have been pointed out to people like Sophia. And Sophia did quite an extended interview with Dr. Wood in 2007.
Okay.
A telephone interview. So she's well aware of the sort of things that are on Dr. Wood's website up until that time. I have personally made her aware of the Hurricane Erin study. We've had Sophia talking on her radio programs about chemtrails, which mm-hmm. You and I have also exchanged a couple of emails over, I know. So that's, I think most people would conclude that chemtrails have got something to do with the weather,
mm-hmm.
Somewhere down the line. I mean, even if you just take the view of getting a massive amount of chemtrails and then blocking out the sun, and that's it, that is effect on the weather. It's an effect on the weather, even if it's just purely by the nature of the particles, and never mind any sort of energy effects that may be being used, which mm-hmm. I think there is clear evidence for. But going back to Sophia, so she knows all these things. She knows Dr. Wood's research. She's been told about Hurricane Erin. She knows about Steve Jones's thermite theory, and she can sort of reel this off pretty comprehensively in a couple of paragraphs.
Uh-huh.
And yet she claims not to understand what Judy Wood has posted.
Okay.
And then she comes out in March with this thing on a couple of radio shows. I think she did it on two or three, judging by what I was able to find. She says, oh, well, what if fluoride was involved in the destruction of the World Trade Center? And I'm thinking, well, hang on a minute. Sophia's put this theory on the table. It doesn't address any of the evidence. She spent thousands of dollars of her own money, supposedly, looking for the truth behind what happened on 9/11, because she'd made this film.
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden she brings this sort of random theory into it. And when you try and sort of, I looked at this theory in this article that I wrote, and I tried to be fair. I went and checked about fluoride and fluorine, and I tried to consider how it may indeed have played some kind of role. But when you actually scrutinize it, there's just really no evidence to support this theory. So mm-hmm. it is just really sort of meaningless conjecture at the end of it. So what's the point? What is the point of spending thousands of dollars on a film and then introducing, a couple of years later, some meaningless conjecture into the picture?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer, as I see it, is that it's a deliberate attempt to bring in something else to divert people's attention away from, the obvious evidence that Dr. Wood has uncovered, which is the Hurricane Erin,
mm-hmm.
the Hutchison effect evidence, as we mentioned a few minutes ago, the justification.
Mm-hmm.
All those things can be distracted from if you bring in some other topic. And fluoride's already got a bad rap,
mm-hmm.
and rightly so. We know that it's a toxic substance.
Yeah.
We know that the fluoride that's introduced into the water is, an industrial grade of fluoride. I forget the actual name for it now. The actual name of the fluoride salts that are involved, but it's different to the naturally occurring fluorides, mm-hmm. which occur in tea and things like that. So why is there this deliberate attempt to muddle up the picture of 9/11 evidence?
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm trying to highlight to people, if people like Sophia, want to introduce these theories, then if they've genuinely got the goal of seeking the truth, then they should show the evidence properly. They
mm-hmm.
should write an article. They should, submit a request for correction to NIST. They should make a court case. Do something, rather than just talking about it.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of people in 9/11 research who are talking about things,
mm-hmm.
but they're not really taking legal action. They're not, sort of continually reviewing the evidence and trying to link it to other areas of research, such as weather control and weather modification,
mm-hmm.
and firming it up.
Well, I'm just thinking, one thing about this prepackaged psychological warfare is the term 9/11, and I really haven't ever I've tried to think about a case where a date, any particular date, was referred to by the number of the month and the day of the month. And it just, and immediately, of course, this was all wheeled right out for us to swallow. And, you know, I mean, one of the common sense things that you know, if, again, let me bring up your site again, is checktheevidence.com, and then, of course, drjudywood.com. And just think about it now. If someone is having trouble, you know, again, we're starting off running from the top bit of this research, but airplanes are very delicate machines, and they are mostly composed of aluminum. Now, there are some steel, the engines, and landing gear, and that's about it. So if any kind of aircraft would have hit the towers, they would have wadded up on the outside and would have fallen to the plaza below. What we're supposed to believe is that this aircraft created a cookie-cutter hole up to the wingtips, and then very briefly later, there is a lady who is standing in this hole. I mean, this is just simply beyond logic and reasoning. It's just, you know, it's...
Absolutely. And I think if you look at the issue on its face, then the plane, as we are told by, you know, much of the people who want to say that planes did hit the towers,
mm-hmm.
they will say, oh, well, the plane, you know, penetrated the towers,
mm-hmm.
but then it shredded.
Mm-hmm.
It shredded itself.
Mm-hmm.
So how can that be? Because mm-hmm. you can't at the same time have a super tough plane and mm. then one that shreds itself. You know, it's either a strong thing. I mean, we know it's a weak thing, but it can't be a strong thing that's mm-hmm. suddenly a weak thing and shred things up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that this very issue shows the depth of trouble that we're in with the thinking, particularly in the academic community.
One thing that was very interesting a little while back, a few months back, you know, the plane that had to make the emergency landing in the Hudson because of the bird strikes. Well, there was some video taken of that, and I thought, look at that. That is very interesting. That's what it showed. That's what a real plane looks like. And then, of course, you know, aerodynamics, we've shot the story down from so many different angles. The aerodynamics involved. A Boeing that size would be incapable of flying at a cruise speed that can only be attained by getting up into the upper atmosphere, well, 30,000 feet or so. So, and then, of course, if you just do a search, there are many videos out there, you know, all the planes are fake, brasscheck.tv.com, different outlets, you will see, I mean, you will just, checking the evidence, actually there are some videos that the plane is not there, or this black blob is not there, some there is. So, you know, it not only is it traveling too fast, it's just, it doesn't look like an actual plane, you know.
That's right, and I think another thing people can have a listen to and a watch of is, there's another video recently being posted by a chap called Jeff Hill, who's a Canadian,
mm-hmm.
and he's had a very sort of simple approach in that he's basically rung up, you know, he's phoned hundreds and hundreds of people, people like Boeing engineers, people who reported as being witnesses to the crashes at the World Trade Center.
Spell the last name, Jeff. Jeff what?
Jeff Hill. Yeah, Jeff Hill.
And
he's got a little. It's actually a 2-hour-long video that he recently posted, and it's called 9/11 Continuous Pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do search for 9/11 Continuous Pieces, you will find this video that Jeff has posted. And he, like I say, he rings up several engineers, you know, some Boeing engineers and some other crash engineers, and he gets a mixture of responses. One of the engineers sort of says, well, you know, the planes must have crashed on 9/11
mm-hmm.
because we can't, you know, you can't tell me, if it wasn't planes that hit, you can't tell me what did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one engineer's sort of response, basically, and he you know, but then the others say, well, things like, you know, the plane traveling at over 340 miles an hour at 700 feet above sea level, it's just not possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the amount of air that it needs to suck into the engine to maintain, you know, the lift or the thrust at that height is just beyond the capacity of the plane. It would shake itself to bits with the engine speed required. You know, you can hear the Boeing engineers sort of describe this in these calls that Jeff Hill makes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like you say, there's so many ways to show that the plane story.
Well, yes. First, I was fixated on the Pentagon. You know, we have the initial impact of damage. Here's a 10-foot by 16-foot hole. There are unbroken windows all around it. There are vehicles right by this hole that are undamaged. They're on fire. You're going to tell me that a Boeing disappeared into that hole? That's fantastic. It's just not. Okay. That's one point. And also, what this now something hit. Something hit, you know, something happened. When I brought this up, I won't go into details of that. The retort was, so it didn't happen? Something happened. Anyway, so something's coming at the Pentagon. Instead of, now, if we're to believe the story, and this fantastic thing, this person that couldn't even fly a Cessna, somehow is doing these magical things with this Boeing that Boeing pilots have testified that they could not do themselves. So instead of just crashing it into the Pentagon, they make a 270-degree turn around the Pentagon, and, of course, the aerodynamics of that turn would be impossible for a big Boeing, and we can, you know, go on and on like that. But
that's right, absolutely. I must sort of say, actually, though, there's been another worrying trend which seems to have developed over the last few weeks in the research to do with 9/11 again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether you've watched this film called September Clues. Have you seen this compilation by Simon Shack?
I've heard of that. I haven't actually sat and watched it. I haven't had much time to do any production on this thing, but anyway.
Okay, well, that basically goes into some of the sort of aspects we've just been talking about in terms of, you know, the plane crashes at the World Trade Center being possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then, you know, as you were sort of mentioning, you know, well, what did hit it? And people have sort of reacted to that, saying, you can't tell me that no planes hit the towers or the Pentagon, because that's what we were told and that's what we all saw, in New York. And then the September Clues video kind of analyzes the video from the World Trade Center in a very sort of detailed fashion. And, you know, it compares the maneuvers of the plane shown in one video with the maneuvers of the second plane, you know, that is I'm primarily talking about, in another video. And you can see that in one clip, the plane does like a dive bomber approach, and yet in another one, it makes a level approach. You know, and this is clearly illustrated in this September Clues series.
Mm-hmm.
Which runs to about 90 minutes.
There's been so much work with this video. There was one very clever video. Okay, this was purported to be live footage at the Pentagon of workers leaving, people in the military leaving the Pentagon. Okay. And they're just kind of, you know, they're just leaving. They're just walking. They're just like people, you know, getting off work. That's it. And then, but the thing they point out is, the shadows were all wrong for that time of day. So this was obvious, some stock footage of people leaving the Pentagon that was being shown as live footage.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. This is it. And you keep coming across these things like that in the video record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you have other things that are in the September Clues, like they show a clip of a news reporter at LAX airport. And LAX is where two of the flights that were supposedly hijacked were meant to be landing, and the point of this news reporter going there was that they were expecting relatives to be coming to meet the families, you know, the people coming off these planes, you know, a few of them, and this guy's doing his report, and he was saying, well, you know, we're waiting for family members to come and get their reaction to all this, and nobody turns up, you know, and he's saying there's nobody here.
That has been a very... Well, I was just saying, it's been a very odd aspect of this that there hasn't, of course, you know, that's one thing people will say. They're trying to defend the official story. Well, what about all the people on the plane? What happened to people on the plane? Well, there have been, I think, very odd silence from people that have, you know, supposedly have lost people on these planes. I mean, you know, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I don't know. I mean,
this is it. You do get into a very sticky area again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we know that the passenger list changed.
Exactly.
There were two different passenger lists published.
No Muslim names.
That's right, and there's a chap I know where it's called Elias Davidson.
Mm-hmm.
He now is in Germany. He's originally from Palestine, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He did a study and he tried to find the evidence for the hijackers getting on the plane.
Yes,
and he found there are no witnesses to the hijackers getting on the plane. There is no CCTV footage from September the 11th of any of the alleged hijackers getting on any of the planes.
Mm-hmm.
None of their names appear on the passenger list.
Kind of like the London Tube bombings when they wanted to get that story, because supposedly, well, where's all the video? Because there's video everywhere. I mean, London, I think, is the most video surveilled place on the planet, right?
Right.
But then
that's
they say
right.
all of a sudden there's no video, and then of course, you know, he was obviously murdered in cold blood.
That's right. You know. So basically, when it comes to a lot of the story of 9/11, you know, there's a huge swathe of it which is really just down to news reports with no other evidence to back it up. You know, and on.
Yeah.
But I'd like to just go back to what I was saying about September clues, because it's a very interesting film, and it's very well put together.
Okay.
And it is worth watching. But what we've seen in the last few weeks is that the creator of September Clues is now trying to say that he's proved that video fakery was used, and they forged some of the videos to show these planes, you know, they went in different directions, and they, you know, they didn't sync up in time and space properly. And that, I think, he's done a pretty good job of proving that case. But he's now gone on from that to try and criticize the collapse videos, the justification videos. And he's now pointing out anomalies in the, you know, different videos showing the destruction of the World Trade Center towers. And I sort of queried him over this, and it seems to me that there is now an effort to say that all the videos from the World Trade Center are faked or doctored or manipulated, and we can therefore not trust the visual record at all from any of the events of the World Trade Center. Now I've queried, you know, this I've queried Simon on this and tried to get his view on, what he thinks about the use of directed energy weapons, you know, and the destruction of the towers, and things like the presence of the hurricane, you know, just off the coast of New York City.
That's a very fascinating part of this.
That's right, it is indeed, and he hasn't really commented. And people are not willing to comment. You know, I've noticed that if you go onto some of these internet forums that are trying to sort of debunk this, and you put these words in, you know, I've been saying this on a forum today, if you put in 9/11, the Hutchinson effect, Hurricane Erin, and free energy, if you put those together in a post on 9/11 on a forum or something, you will get virtually nobody else who seems able to bring those ideas together in a post. It's almost like it's taboo completely, you know. Or if they do bring those things together, they'll simply make some disparaging remarks. They don't come back and say, well, this evidence is explained by this, this evidence is explained by this, and this evidence explained by this. That's why you're wrong. They don't say that. They will say, oh, this is just bunkum, and, you know, and we've seen that, you know, this research has been debunked multiple time, and that's basically all they can say, you know. So we're really, what we're seeing is that the cat is well and truly out of the bag. You know, we're really seeing that the cat is out of the bag, and it's starting to run around. And there's some people that are really trying to get the dogs to go and get the cat, bite its head off.
Now, I don't know, this might be, I guess maybe, of course, it's all part of the story. Now, this was several years ago, I had a guest, Mike Berger of 911truth.org.
Okay.
It was a very interesting conversation. You know, he had lots of just amazing details about all these weird little things, but he was very adamant about putting forth the idea that planes hit the buildings. And at the time, I just kind of let that go. But, you know, now I don't know. I can't really speak for Mr. Berger. But, you know, it's kind of odd that, like you were saying, like the one time, we have quite a few examples of this, quite a few examples where people that are calling themselves 9/11 Truth, they will, because, you know, a lot of it's so obvious, but they still want to kind of stir you back to some portion of the official story as being true.
That's it. And we've seen this thing in the last couple of weeks. You may have seen it, this new Thermite paper has been published. This is another very troubling development, because to me, it illustrates that what's going on is truly a global operation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some people who will say, oh, you know, Bush and Cheney were behind 9/11. They did everything. It was all their fault. They knew mm-hmm. exactly what went down, and they orchestrated it.
Mm-hmm. Well, honestly, I don't. You know, I don't think that. You know, if you have been paying attention, it goes back to Kennedy and before that, the warnings of Eisenhower. You know, I think it's quite obvious that the people that are actually running things are not the ones that we see on the TV screen. You know,
I totally agree. And with this thermite paper, I corresponded with a Danish chemist last summer who's called Niels Harrit.
Okay.
And I, you know, I don't mind saying that now because he's now published this paper, which is called "The Study of Active Thermitic Compounds in the World Trade Center Debris." And this was published a couple of weeks ago, I think now, maybe just over a week ago, and it's received wide exposure because it was published in a supposedly a peer-reviewed journal called the Bentham Open Journal.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a web-only journal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there is a paper print edition. If you want to get a paper published in there, or reviewed, supposedly reviewed, in there, you have to pay $800.
Really?
Yeah. And all the papers are free to download, so it's not like a proper science, you know, journal where you have a membership which might cost you $500 a year to receive copies of the journal. There doesn't seem to be a proper peer review process, et cetera. Somebody's done quite a good critique of this, actually. But going back to this Danish chemist, when I approached him last summer and said, well, you're saying that thermite was used in the destruction of the World Trade Center.
Okay.
How does this explain the inverted cars? How does this explain the horseshoe bent beams, where we've got these beams bent into a horseshoe shape with no apparent heat use? How does it explain the rusting? How does it explain the banker's trust, which is was repaired and then taken down?
And then it came back.
That's right.
Really bizarre stuff.
Yeah, and he basically just ignored my statements about the inverted cars. He said, I saw this in a movie once.
Well,
that was his response.
The testimony of Dr. Judy Wood has on her site, drjudywood.com, the firefighter that was just coming out of the Ground Zero, and he was just dumbfounded. He said, it's been a little while since played, it's about a minute, but he's saying that the craziness of how things were melted and twisted and melted tour bus and melted fire engines and then he said things with windows blown out, and he's trying to rationalize, say, well, it must have been from falling debris, but these vehicles didn't have falling debris on them, you know, and the situation.
That's right. I mean, you know, we have the exploding oxygen tanks, the Scott packs as they're called, on the back of the fire truck just spontaneously exploding.
Okay.
We have the car fires before either of the towers came down, you know, cars spontaneously going up in flames or something.
Up to a mile away.
Yeah, I think some of them were a mile away, but we've got a home video from 9:46 a.m. with a couple of cars bursting into flames at a parking lot. We actually got the video of that happening. And then we have the New York Daily News photographer, David Hampshire, who was there as the towers came down. He was levitated and carried a block by a cloud of what he called hot gravel. But he wasn't burned. He wasn't burned. None of his skin was burned. He said this cloud had substance and it was black. And it carried him for a whole block. And we've got several other reports of witnesses being levitated. This isn't an effect of an explosion.
No.
You know, if you have an explosive force, you'll get blasted against the wall. You won't be just lifted up a block and carried a bit and then dropped down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't get cars selectively lifted upside down and the others, you know, the right way up.
Mm. Okay, I have to do a station ID. This is WSHC Shepherdstown. Interviews 29/17 of April. We're speaking with Mr. Andrew Johnson. His site is, of course, checktheevidence.com. And then there you'll be linked to. And this last email, what we're talking about right now, active thermite material discovered in the dust from WTC World Trade Center catastrophe, questioning that. And going down there a little bit below there, you're saying, we have one link that is showing the magnetic disturbance. I was looking at magnetic field disturbances at the precise moment of first impact.
Yeah, that's right. This is another key piece of evidence that Dr. Wood uncovered. very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
And we see attempts to muddle up this evidence as well, because, you know, as you know, Dr. Wood has been saying since October or November 2006, so we're looking at almost 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
She has been saying directed energy weapons were used in some form at the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
And the bit of evidence that she uncovered last year was looking at the Alaskan magnetometer data, which was available through the University of Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And we have these little devices stationed up in Alaska. There's a map of them as well on Dr. Wood's site and also on the website where these are, you can gather the data from these. And they measure the Earth's magnetic field on the ground. And they're linked to, you know, some kind of data logger, and you get a reading of the strength of the magnetic field, which you can then, you know, put into a computer, and it's logged. And Dr. Wood downloaded this data and found that at the 8:46 a.m. On 9/11, which was the moment of the supposed first impact of
mm-hmm.
the first plane,
mm-hmm.
about, I think it's 4, 5, or even 6 different instruments
mm-hmm.
show that the Earth's magnetic field dipping to a low point at the precise moment of impact,
mm-hmm.
and then it recovers a few seconds afterwards. And if you look at this particular picture, I think it covers a time span of about something like about 20 seconds or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks as if the Earth's magnetic field has actually anticipated this supposed first plane crash,
mm-hmm.
which of course didn't make any sense. And some people have tried to describe this as a glitch in the data. Well, that's not accurate, because it's not a glitch, because you've got the data logging is spread over a period of about 10, 20, or 30 seconds.
Okay.
So it's not just a little, you know, one or two readings glitched by a, you know, an electricity spike or something like that. It's a consistent dip in the data, and these instruments are separated by miles. They're separated by miles. So we're seeing a consistent pattern in the Earth's magnetic field being disturbed. By what? By a plane crash? No, of course not. This is more evidence that a directed energy weapon was used not only to destroy the towers themselves, but also to make these cookie-cutter-shaped holes. And we've already just discussed, you know, that we know a plane could not do that. It's just not hard enough.
No.
It's just not possible.
And then
whether it's fuel or not.
One thing, quickly, this is the Eric Hufschmidt video, which was put out years ago. Let's see, I think, what was the name of that? It was called,
Painful Deceptions.
Exactly, Painful Deceptions. He pointed out the seismographic data was not consistent with a 500,000-ton building falling down.
Exactly.
Just not there.
Yeah.
You know, you'd expect, and also witnesses on the ground, like, they were right across the street. You know, and they're like Dr. Judy Wood has pointed out with the witnesses, you know, like, where'd the buildings go? And, like, one time the firefighters, they thought they'd made a mistake and came out the wrong door, but they went around and was like, you know, suddenly this building is gone. Well, we have to explain it somehow. We have no debris. You know, where did it go? Where did they go?
Well, that's it. And I think, you know, going back to your opening theme as a psychological operation, you know, PSYOP, this is the only way they can kind of keep people's minds from actually exploring those basic questions that you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fortunately, you know, Judy was immune to the PSYOP. You know, I mean, I wasn't immune, because I was taken in by it. It was about 3 years before I started questioning 9/11. You know, 2.5 years minimum, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And up to that point, I hadn't really given it a second thought. I saw the event, I was shocked by it, and then my intellectual reasoning about it was shut down totally.
And I guess one thing we could make a quick mention, Shanksville. There is a... Well, it's not funny, but look at the pictures of Shanksville. There's just a hole. You know, there's a hole. There's no debris. And of course, that's where a good part of the story, you know, this let's roll business. And, of course, oh, my God, I've spent so much time, like, the supposed phone calls were a technological impossibility, you know, and you decide spend days dissecting the story, I guess, as I have done for some time. I've been sort of stayed away from the story for a while, but I thought it might be time to revisit it, because now we have, because I guess I've just heard these, you don't really hear much about it, but now and then, you know, like with what Obama now, change and hope, so we're escalating in Afghanistan, and then there, every now and then that 9/11 thing, you know, because of 9/11, all this business is because of 9/11, and also a quote that I really wanted to, I think is extremely pertinent. I did a couple of shows with James W. Douglas, and I had quite a bit of work with him. Well, presenting his work of Kennedy's. Oh boy, where's the book? JFK and the Unspeakable. Why he died and why it matters. Originally, he wanted to call it A Turning. And of course, it's a very complicated story. It's all about, you know, Khrushchev and Kennedy and all these things. But now, here's what applies to this story equally as well, as most of the Kennedy story does anyway. But Mr. Douglas has a witness who I guess is still alive, and he was an official in the Kennedy administration. And it was about the photographs of John Fitzgerald Kennedy's body from the autopsy, and they were obviously altered. And so the quote from this individual says, but if these official photos and x-rays of President Kennedy are not authentic, then you have something of a magnitude beyond common experience that would reflect so devastatingly on our society as a whole and its corruptibility that you don't know how to deal with it. And that is exactly what we have with this 9/11 psyops.
I think that's a very good quote indeed, and very, very appropriate. And I think, you know, I actually, it's funny you bring that up, because you know, I made a presentation about a lot of the issues that you know, we're touching on at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I gave this a talk in the UK in July last year, you know, and I've made it, somebody came along and filmed it, thankfully, and you know, I made it into a DVD. Mm-hmm. And I actually used those very autopsy photos you mentioned, or one of them, in the presentation, because, mm-hmm. it's the faking of evidence, the doctoring of evidence, and the muddling up and the muddying of the waters, mm-hmm. to prevent people from finding out what really happened. And the media complicity, you know, which I think was obviously present with the Kennedy assassination.
Yes.
You know, and you watch this September Clues film, and you're left in no doubt, you know, no doubt whatsoever, that that the media were complicit at a quite high level.
Mm-hmm.
And then the most of the reporters, it seems, from where I'm standing, mm-hmm. you know, they just read out what they're given.
Exactly.
They don't really think. They're not given the time to think. They're not really, you know, it's not really suggested they should think.
Mm-hmm.
They're given a bit of a script. You know, they might be a little bit smart. They have a good way. You know, they're very good at much better than I am at being eloquent. You know, and,
mm-hmm.
and they can do things on the fly. You know, they can adapt, mm-hmm. if a technical problem comes up. You know, and they can be very smooth and slick about things.
Yes.
But they don't think.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they can't see, you know, obvious problems. You know, and real investigative journalism seems to be, you know, very, very much.
It's gone.
Dead,
completely gone.
Yeah.
And unless, like, you know, what we're trying to do or things on the web. Yes, I have September Clues going on in the background. And it is an interesting, because, you know, this psyops, in a sense, it's like a knot. It's like a very, say you've gotten a rope that's just tied into a knot that is just, it's so, you can't untie it. Well, you know, maybe you can try to untie it, but you might have to, you know, cut it out. You might have to slowly cut it, and that's, you know, exactly. Now, at times, maybe I've been a little harsh. I presented some work. Some people have said, well, you know, at this point, if you don't see what's going on in relation to the subject, you're either a traitor or an idiot. Well, you know, I guess I don't want to be that brutal in my name-calling, but I guess there could be some sort of unhappy middle ground where, you know, someone has, you know, say it's a very painful issue, and they're just accepted, they're not, because, you know, you have, you know, you have to work, you know, where, you know, you have to spend so much of your time in just surviving and living, and okay, here's the point where the silhouette of the plane comes completely out the other side of the building. I mean, look at that, you know.
If you watch that compilation, the impression I thought at the end was, well, even if only a third of this is correct,
uh-huh.
and only a third of it is the analysis is correct, you know, valid,
mm.
then it's still so very damning,
mm-hmm.
of what actually went on.
Oh yeah.
And you really are, I think, into the point of thinking, well, this psyop is so powerful, and it is so far-reaching, you know, and I think it operates at so many different levels, one of which is, you know, the basic level is people are just too busy surviving,
yes.
you know, to you know, go any much further than what's shown on the TV. You know, but then over and above that, you've got the sophisticated operation on the internet, which is involving hundreds, if not thousands, of people, you know, working these message boards and working and putting out these articles, like this Thermite study, you know. And that sort of brings me back to this Danish chemist, who I could clearly see was just what we call a thermite sniffer. He was saying, thermite did it, and I'm not having, I don't want to talk about anything else. I'm not interested in any other evidence. I'm not interested in any other analysis, because I know thermite was the only thing that did it. And this guy was Danish, and I know people who met him. I know he's a real guy. I know that somebody in London, you know, I know very well, have met him and been to one of his lectures. So this means, and you know, you can go on to Copenhagen University and you'll find him, you know, listed in there as a member of the academic staff. So we know that he's, you know, he's a regular guy in that respect. So why, what's happening? This must be a global, a global psychological operation, you know. And this paper, if you look at it that I mentioned, one thing I haven't written in that little critique, who funded it? If you look at the paper, look at the pictures, it's, I think it's 25 pages long, electron micrographs, you know, very nicely formatted. So who's funded this? You know, I couldn't put something like that together myself, you know.
Yes, it's just a huge story, and I guess maybe, you know, I've been trying to cover some esoteric topics here for the past maybe a couple of months, and but, you know, here it is, and until we deal with this, it is now have become, you know, part of our culture, and is supposed to, and see, really, it's like myth. Myth is sacred story that is supposed to control your behavior, and it also creates taboos, because if you step outside of the myth, then it's taboo, and then you're shut out. And I guess, I don't know what you think about David Icke, but I've presented some of his talks, and he talks about that, how that he talked about the sheep. You know, he saw how this had a massive herd of sheep one time. He was, he had to wait for it to cross the road or something, and this shepherd just got out and he did something, gave a little signal and did something, and it was like, you know, one sheep started, I forget how exactly he said the story, but in a sense, and of course there are some sheepdogs kind of keeping him in line, but, yeah.
Well, that's a good analogy, and, you know, I have actually met David Icke, and I had a 2.5-hour meeting with him last year.
It would, it'd be wonderful if we could speak with him here. I have, actually, well, you know, he's I've played a few, actually, for the past, month or so, I've played just, you know, there was one interview with him, I forget the people, and there was another talk he gave. Actually, there was one talk I played in its entirety that was like from 1996 that was really just, it really could be hardly, you know, just instead of saying Bosnia, you'd say, you know, Iraq or whatever. It was just still pertinent, you know, and it's 96.
Well, he's, you know, he's been at this for quite a long time now, and again, going back to the, I think it's a good link with the type of media issue, because David Icke was kind of, he experienced some shift in consciousness, I think in the late 80s, so we're talking 20 years ago, and that caused him, I think, very quickly to become a target of ridicule.
Yes.
And I think he wasn't able at that time to kind of, he didn't know quite what was going on and what happened to him. And the media really jumped on him. And he went from being a mainstream anchorman on the BBC sports programmes to an object of ridicule, probably within the space of 12 or 18 months. But if you listen to the way he describes that, He thinks that was the necessary thing for him to it freed him, you see, from all of that side of the media to do what he's done now. You know, and he's got a huge following in this country. You know,
really?
And I mean, he I think he put on an event last year, and he filled he'll fill a hall of 1,000 or 1,500 people. Easily, And then also, I don't know if you know, this is an interesting story, because he stood for an election last year.
Really?
I didn't know. There's a place called Hull, which is in the north of England.
Uh-huh.
I've been there a few times myself, and there was what's called a by-election there. We call them by-elections, where I think one of the MP had either he resigned or he died or
uh-huh.
He had to retire due to ill health or something. I can't remember. So you've then got a position, in Parliament, which goes up for election,
mm-hmm.
but not, at the time of a general election.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided to stand for this, not because he wanted to get into power, but basically to draw attention to the sort of global fascist police state.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you listening in America who are worried about the sort of police brutality and the increase in police powers and the
mm-hmm.
threats to gun control and this sort of thing, we've got it just about a locked step agenda in this country,
mm-hmm.
with police brutality and people being picked up for photographing police
mm-hmm.
and accused of being terrorists. That happened this week again.
Really?
So David Icke really used that whole by-election as a way of basically grabbing some media attention onto what's really going on, in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that the thought police are being empowered to shut down people's thinking,
mm-hmm.
As well as everything else.
It was probably, I do kind of, well, sometimes when I can stomach it, I listen to the BBC somewhat, and there was a comment, I forget where it was a European individual, and they were saying that Obama is popular not so much because of who he is, because he's not Bush. Does that make it, what is the read of on Obama there in the UK, which you can do?
Well, I don't watch the news much here now.
Yeah.
So I couldn't give you a fair impression, but what I will say is that
okay.
you may remember that when he was still before he was even at a certain point in the polls,
mm-hmm.
he went on a European tour and
okay.
he came to Britain before he was even elected.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember any other U.S. Presidential candidate coming to Britain and
yeah.
being part of a European tour.
I don't recall.
No. What if he'd lost? It was just very strange,
mm-hmm.
the way it was. It's like he was already chosen before the election had been, been done.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I've never come across that before.
Well, the way, I supported Congressman Dr. Ron Paul, and so did the overwhelming majority of the United States active military, because his position was that we need to go back to a constitutional platform. We need to bring our military home. We need to stop this empire nonsense. We have to get back on a fiscally sound position. This monopoly money that we have, and now this thing, which so really Obama has just continued, is basically a seamless continuation. And I listened to WPFW. Yes, you were on. Were you even in the studio, Ambrose Eileen's program?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, I went to. That's when I went to New York. That was in January 2008. Yeah.
I make a point to catch his program. It's very insightful. And I guess one point I was going to make was let's see. A lot of the callers, and of course, this is a black-owned station, and the callers. Actually, as soon as Obama started picking Rahm Emanuel and started picking his cabinet, they were just absolutely livid. They were calling in saying, oh, wait a minute, we've been played for fools, bait and switch. He says hope and change, which are just completely amorphous, odd little hope and change. Okay, well, and he did run on, we're going to get out of Iraq. Well, now we're not going to get out of Iraq. We have permanent bases, and now we're going to escalate or double or who knows what this thing with Afghanistan. And of course, the drones. He was hardly in office for a week. I think less than a week, and a drone killed people. And the Afghans are very upset about this because these drones are mostly killing innocent civilians, and it's not.
Wow.
It's not. Yeah,
I mean,
ridiculous.
That's something I haven't closely followed, but, again, as you say, and David Icke, going back to the David Icke, because he did a long piece on Obama, saying that what they did with Obama was they built him up and they made what he said very non-specific,
but
it sounded as if it was specific.
Yes.
So people put all their hopes for change onto Obama,
mm-hmm.
And projected their hopes onto him. And this is just another massive psyop.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, you're mentioning members of the administration, and, you know, I've been speaking to a chap in, who lives in Washington, who's a good friend of ours, and he was pointing out to me this John Holdren. Have you heard of John Holdren? He's the, I think he's a science advisor. I don't know his official title.
Oh, really?
But yeah. he's in Obama's immediate line of advisors.
Okay.
And we had an article published in the Associated Press with him saying that to combat global warming, they were now considering spraying things into the atmosphere deliberately.
Okay.
This is an Associated Press article which was published about a week and a half ago.
Yes. Well, you know, that seems to be happening, this whole global warming business, but it's also happening on every planet in the solar system. There's been massive changes
exactly.
in the sun itself. So, you know, yeah. That just cancels all that business anyway. It's just obviously another tool for attempt at social control. You know, we have to...
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. And, you know, there are more people now are rising up to this. But, again, this brings us precisely back to Dr. Wood's research in 9/11, because, you know, again, if you look at the path of the hurricane and you look at where it was during the events of 9/11, it was it got the closest to New York during the events of 9/11.
Yes. It's
so this, again, you know, just to finish that brief point off, that brings up the issue of weather control.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody can control the weather to that extent, that completely changes and transforms this idea of carbon dioxide-based global warming. It changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
It changes everything.
It's kind of an astonishing moment when you see that Hurricane Aaron. It's like, what? A hurricane that big right off the coast and not one mention is made at all? I mean, that's extraordinary.
Right.
That's just unbelievable. Your hurricanes
it
are
is.
Huge news. I mean, that's, you know, weather. It's like, so...
That's it, you know, and you're exactly right. And, you know, Dr. Wood said when she posted this information for the first time, she said, well, let's say it's a coincidence. Well, if it is a coincidence, and it's nothing to do with the events of 9/11 itself, as it were, as, you know, as we've kind of, you know, intimated, then why wasn't it reported? Because it was still a threat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, 9/11 didn't start until, you know, 8:45 in the morning or something, whatever it was, but there were still... probably 12, 16 hours, 18, 20, 24 hours previous to that when Aaron should have been on the radar screen of the media, you know. It was a danger to the East Coast, just as Katrina was.
And
so if it was a coincidence, why wasn't it reported?
The Weather Channel I watched, the Weather Channel has this program, they have, you know, these little programs called It Could Happen Tomorrow. It's sort of like fantasizing what would happen if really bad, you know, weather and different things happen. And one of the subjects was a hurricane, just such as Hurricane Aaron, if it hit Manhattan, it said the devastation would be complete, because it would be basically look like that movie The Day After Tomorrow. The streets would be inundated. The subways would be ruined, because the subways are constantly being pumped out. And that's another thing, too. There was a work of a gentleman, I forget the name of the book, but it's sort of like, you know, what if humans just suddenly vanish? You know, what would happen to all of our, you know, the buildings and everything? And that was one of the first points, is that because, you know, eventually the pumps would start working on the subways, they would fill up with water, then the streets would cave in. And, you know, so if a hurricane like Aaron hit Manhattan again, it would be completely devastated. It would make Katrina look like, you know, a picnic. And so here this hurricane is not even, you know, reported, because you can't evacuate so many things. You can't evacuate everyone and just go on and on. You know, and New York would be destroyed. So it's not...
That's right.
You know,
and I mean, you know, New York's probably, you know, maybe I'm wrong on this, but I think I would have thought it's got to be America's biggest financial center.
Yes.
You know, and somewhere like New Orleans, I suppose, has, you know, oil sort of terminals and things nearby and whatnot, but as a sort of hub of financial dealings, New Orleans wouldn't be quite in the same league. Or, you know, I'm not trying to sort of denigrate what New Orleans is, but from a business and economic perspective, you know, I would have thought New York has got to be more up on the list, you know, higher up on the list than you know, New Orleans.
No question.
So again, this is why we think there's such a huge effort to cover up what Dr. Wood has posted, because the danger, as I see it, for the people that are running everything, if they are indeed people, is that when we start to know that the weather is being controlled,
mm-hmm.
we know that global warming is a scam, we know that the war on terror is a scam,
and
we also know that the energy question is a
exactly.
scam.
The Tesla work?
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Energy should be free. For 100 years now, we have not needed petroleum. You know, it is... And a lot of people know that. A lot of people know that. You know, I mean, people calling up to WPFW, I listen to the community comment a lot. You know, and these are people that, you know, on one hand, you know, they're maybe, I'm saying that they have extremely sophisticated points and ideas. And so this information has been out, you know, for some time. And we're starting to say, well, you know, why don't we have free energy? You know, why do we have to put up with this, you know, media manipulation? And, I don't know. There was one point I was going to say about this. Out of the story is just so huge. I mean, there's so many angles to come at this. I got again September clues going on in the background. It's just amazing, you know, to watch. I mean, all this the video fakery and you know, I don't know. I was trying to think of one point that well, I might come back up, but you know, and again, I think it is important to do this. I haven't looked at it in a long time, but it's why I started this, because on my point originally, you know, being a pilot, I knew that just the story itself was completely illogical. You're going to tell me that four heavy jets are basically simultaneously hijacked and they're not intercepted, you know, and oh, one thing I wanted to do, I haven't, one thing that helps me, TNC.net, the Emperor's New Clothes.net, and I'll think of the gentleman's name in a moment, but right away, and it's just a matter of like your website says, check the evidence. He looked at what was reported and considered its reasonableness, and it was just amazing. It was like, and it's been years since I've heard this, but it just so stuck in my head. It's like, okay, Donald Rumsfeld, let's see. Well, one of the quotes, okay, oh, yes, interesting point. Stan, was it Meyer, the acting? Not Stan Meyer, that's the water.
That's right.
Yeah, but it was Myers. It was General Myers. He's the acting
Joint
Chief.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. He says that he didn't know that the second building had been bombed in New York. For a lengthy period of time, he was like, well, he had to, he was on the phone talking to someone about the dangers of terrorism, and you know, and then like a Rumsfeld, you know, was supposedly somebody said, well, would you like to go to the National Military Command Center? And he goes, no, I have to make some calls. You know, here it is. You know, two of the biggest buildings have been bombed in New York, and these people are acting. He points out it's like a satire. It's like just this bizarre satire of their behavior. And of course, Bush, you know, that's very famous. Him looking at the upside down book, you know, here, and of course, then what thing, Jared Israel is his name. What he points out right away is they knew before Bush's motorcade left the hotel that the first building had been bombed. Okay, one of the greatest dangers, one of the greatest fears of the Secret Service. I think Truman's White House was hardened because they had an idea that, my God, you know, somebody could fly a plane into the building where the president is. And of course, the Secret Service is to protect the life of the president. Why did they take him to that school 5 miles from International Airport? I haven't thought about this for a while, but it just goes on and on and on. It's all of the story, every single aspect of the story, every microsecond of the story is completely unreasonable and illogical, and we have shredded it. Okay, now maybe we can't say exactly what did happen. You know, I wasn't there pushing any buttons. I don't know what happened, but we can tell with a certain degree of certainty that the true story, the official story we're supposed to believe is false. It's obvious. You know?
Absolutely, yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean,
that's it. I mean, you know, there are so many factors on which you can challenge it. And, you know, as I think we might have said earlier on, but it's probably worth repeating, that with the plane story at the World Trade Center, we can fully say what didn't hit the World Trade Center. We can say it wasn't large Boeing planes that hit mm-hmm. the World Trade Center, because mm-hmm. the physical damage, you know, which you would see, which you can work out within certain parameters
mm-hmm.
based on the laws of physics, it's not consistent with that.
Well, within days, there was a gentleman who was the, he developed, there was a shaker system. Boeing designed a shaker system because there was a...
Yeah, Joe Keith, yeah.
Okay, what was the name?
Joseph Keith, yes.
Okay, yes, great. You know the story, certainly. I believe it was in a response to, there was, I think it was a British jetliner, maybe the Constellation or something, that they started disappearing. And they're like, what happened was, there was a design flaw, and when they got to a certain speed, they would just rattle themselves apart. So the gentleman developed this shaker system that once they have a aircraft, they'd put it on this thing, and it would shake it at very, very high frequencies to see if the structural integrity, you know, would be maintained. And this gentleman, when he's looking at this, he goes, he thought that the videos that they were showing was just sort of like a, like an artist's rendition of what would have happened. And then he goes, like, how stupid do people have to be to believe that, I think, was one of his comments, you know. Making a cookie cutter hole in a steel building. We have soft aluminum cutting through structural steel. I mean, you can watch the video. There's a video of the building of these towers, you know, massive core columns. And here, and this video is just fatal to the story. September, please. When you see the silhouette, the undamaged silhouette of a Boeing coming out the other side of the building, the story is over.
That's right.
It's just completely false, you know. Oh, and Jamie McIntyre is up now. Now, didn't he kind of make an about face? Because when he was touring, he says, well, there's no wreckage, we don't see anything, you know. And then they, and I almost want to think, now they're showing the four frames of video that were released from the Pentagon. And it shows, obviously, a squiggly steam vapor trail of what had to be a missile or something very similar. Because, and to me, it seems like that was leaked intentionally by someone to show, hey, look, you know, this is obvious, the story is not true. Because, and then you go on and on about that. I mean, Hubschmidt did a lot of work with that. Painful deceptions.
Yeah. You know, I think there's been sort of layers of information which have been released. And but what we've also seen, again, you know, is a sort of worrying trend in that, for example, you know, one of the things which really troubled me was this story of Ace Baker, musician chap. But this was a very troubling story because he did a very interesting study of, you know, you just mentioned about the seeing the silhouette of the plane come out of the other side of the building.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a very interesting study on that where he got the video footage and he took a frame-by-frame analysis of it. And, you know, this study's still on the internet. He's got it posted on his website.
Mm-hmm.
And he drew some graphs, you know, to sort of show the position of the nose on each frame.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically proved that there was video fakery. He specifically stated that, I think, I'm pretty sure this is correct, but it was video compositing, where, you know, you lay one video image on top of another to produce a composite.
Yes.
And that's what he basically concluded. And, you know, this was one of the first studies I'd seen of this, and it was very well put together, and it seemed to be quite scientific.
Mm-hmm.
And he claimed to be a digital processing expert.
Mm-hmm.
So this looked all very good, you know, that he was nailing this down with some hard data and sort of proving this case up.
Mm-hmm.
But then what he did after this was it's like he almost used this as a kind of, get out of jail free card to gain credibility.
Mm-hmm.
in the 9/11 truth movement, because what he then did a couple of years later, or 18 months later, was he started to attack the research to do with the Hutchinson effect of 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And he's gone to extraordinary lengths over this. You know, I've written articles about this and they're on the website, but it's like he used the no planes issue, as we call it, you know, lack of planes at the World Trade Center, to gain credibility with those who were doing some detailed and serious research. But then he turned around and started attacking other researchers in that field who were already there.
Mm-hmm.
And he did create quite a lot of upset, and I actually wrote a satirical article about this called The Baker Effect.
Mm-hmm.
Which was kind of a skit on the Hutchinson effect, and I put that on the website as well, and you know, I said that this guy had a particular effect.
Yes.
Which was to sort of stop people's intellectual capacity, because mm-hmm. I know people who were very much affected by this when we got 500 pounds of metal samples that John Hutchinson had produced with anomalous properties, you know, melting without heat,
mm-hmm.
Metal merged with wood. But then we have people who said that what Ace Baker had done was perfectly fine because he challenged John Hutchinson with $100,000 to reproduce one of his experiments,
uh-huh.
a levitation experiment,
yeah.
which John actually subsequently did do in November last year. But Ace Baker didn't show up.
Mm.
John invited Ace Baker up to Canada to see this reproduction of this levitation experiment for the $100,000 bet.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Ace Baker didn't even show up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is a very worrying trend that we've seen researchers gain credibility in one area,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, then they've used that to attack other research in a related area.
Mm-hmm.
Very troubling.
It
seems to be happening with September, you know, the research of September Clues. Not quite the same thing.
Well, it's September Clues. I'm at the Shanksville part. It's like 29 minutes into it.
Right.
I've frozen it, the debris. First, they show the hole. The hole. Now, actually, it was Dr. Fetzer. I don't know what's happened to him. Maybe we talk about him a little bit. But he was saying that he had witness testimony of a Air Force, at least a colonel. It was a relatively high-ranking Air Force retired officer, that his job for the military was investigating plane wrecks. Because, you know, it's the military. I mean, it happens quite a bit. And he said, in his opinion, it looked like somebody had dug a hole, buried some trash, and blown it up. Because the hole is ridiculous. Again, with the up-to-the-wingtips business. You know, and then they have the debris. All the debris could be carried away in a pickup truck. You know, this is talking about a massive Boeing. You know, I mean, there would be an abundance of wreckage. You know.
Yes, that's right. That's it. I mean, the Shanksville, hole is a plane-shaped hole in the ground. I mean, it's just, it's just crazy, you know.
And there's a lady holding up a picture she's taken of the, kind of like a little puff ball of the, you know, there was some type of explosion. Somebody blew up something. But,
that's right.
You know.
Could have been anything.
The debris, they got a bucket with this odd-looking debris. They've just got some containers with some, Yeah. Wow.
That's right. I mean, there's also the story of the coroner. I forget his name.
Okay.
But he got there and looked around for 20 minutes and said there was nothing for him to do because there were no bodies.
Mm. Well, yeah, that was one thing Hushman about the Pentagon. You know, there's no plane wreckage. There's no... I mean, if you're going to have... I think they only said like 60 people supposedly on the plane, which, of course, again, was an odd part of the story because all these planes were supposedly way under... passengered, I guess. But he said there's no blood, there's no body parts, all that I had, you know, the original picture, the original 10-foot by 16-foot hole. You know, I mean, you look at that picture and, you know, check the evidence, just look at it, and it's just not, you know, and it's like, you know, why bring it up again? But I feel we have to bring it up again because so much of our life is being controlled by the story, you know.
Absolutely.
And it didn't start that. It goes back, probably in this country, goes back to the... what I call the War of Lincoln's Aggression, which is a whole big subject. You know, look up the real Lincoln, but, you know, whatever.
Mm.
So what's Dr. Wood been doing lately? Is she she has some lawsuits going. What is the status of those?
Yeah, I mean, the lawsuits, there's one lawsuit that Dr. Wood has. I mean, what happened with that, to people who may have sort of have some knowledge of it, was the sort of first round was all submitted, and then there was a ruling at the end of June, last year, I think it was 29th of June 2008,
mm-hmm.
and at that time there were three pending, there were two key TAM cases. One was Dr. Reynolds' key TAM case, and the other was Dr. Wood's, and then there was a third case, which I don't think was a key TAM, but it was, I forget what it was, by Ed Haas, who's a reporter for the Muckraker Report, and he'd done one based on Building 7 to NIST.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was the judge, who was, I think, George B. Daniels, I think is his name, he posted a ruling which dismissed all three cases, but he literally used the same document to dismiss all three cases, and he just changed, you know, the case number and the names on the front, and he dismissed them all with the same document, and the document mentioned the JFK assassination and the moon landings. Which, of course, have nothing to do with the evidence that Dr. Wood has posted, and Dr. Reynolds, you know, they've posted a totally separate sets of evidence. One's to do with Building 7, that was the Ed Haas case, as I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Reynolds' case was to do with the plane animations that NIST produced, which were totally bogus. And Dr. Wood's case was to do with the directed energy evidence and the fact that NIST had actually admitted, they'd basically admitted fraud because NIST had said the title of their report was The Collapse of the World Trade Center Towers.
Mm.
That was the title of their 2005 set of reports, which ran to 10,000 pages.
Mm.
But Dr. Wood pointed out that in a letter from NIST to her, in response to her request for a correction earlier in the year, that NIST said that they didn't investigate the collapse. They only investigated the events up to the point of collapse.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fraud on its face. because the title actually says the collapse.
Mm.
But the letter said, up to the point of collapse, which is different. If it had said, the missed World Trade Center report on, you know, up to the point of collapse, and the word collapse itself ends up being fraudulent, because as we discussed earlier, the buildings didn't collapse, they turned to dust.
Exactly, and of course that's the another of all the major points. You know, Dr. Wood pointed out that on average, when you collapse a building, however that happens, you have a pile of 12% of the original height. So, and of course, all the debris is there because we've taken the building down and now we have to scoop it up and carry it away. But now, did we have 14 floors of a pile of 14-floor pile high of debris? No, we have the lobby parts of it intact. We have firefighters picking out jeans for themselves in the basement. Somebody, like one of the Dr. Woods, has some audio thing. They're calling out in the basement for any survivors, and there's an echo. So there's really the basement. It's like, so all these, each building, 500,000 tons, and there's no debris. It's gone.
That's it. That's the key, simple key factor, and you don't need to be a scientist.
No.
You know, this is my, you know, point as well. You know, you do not need to be a scientist. You don't need to peer review that.
No.
You know, it's a bit like peer reviewing, you know, the colour of the sky on a clear day, you know. You know, do you need to peer review that? You need a climatologist to tell you what the colour of the sky is on a clear day, you know.
Yes.
I mean, it's that, you're down to that sort of level, really, with some of the evidence that Dr. Wood has posted. So you've just got to look at what happened. But going back to the court cases themselves.
So
Dr. Wood put her case onto appeal, I think it was a couple of months later.
Uh-huh.
So we then did have another round of submissions of documents. I think it was in January. We had to submit the documents for the appeal, which went forward, and that you know, that cost quite a bit of money to do that. And I think basically since then, I don't know what the latest development is, but it is still on appeal, the Key Town case. That's about all I know of that at this point in time. So,
well, yes. I was going to go to Dr. Wood's site, maybe play that one little minute thing of the firefighter coming out and just being amazed at what he said. I think he said incredible. He said the debris is just incredible or something.
Yeah,
you know, something
yeah.
like that. But
I can't remember the specific audio, but yeah, there's the other story of the firefighters in Stairwell B.
I
don't know if you've come across that story, but there was actually a UK documentary about that. It was called, Stairwell B, I think, or something with Stairwell B in it. And there was this group of about four or five of them were trapped in Stairwell B.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they had a walkie-talkie with them, and there were people outside radioing them after it had come down. You know, and they were saying, "Where are you? Where are you?"
Mm-hmm.
They were saying Stairwell B. You know, and they were saying, "Where are you? Stairwell B." You know. And they couldn't believe that these guys could have survived because the rest of the building was just completely gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they were indeed in the remains of Stairwell B, you know, just near ground level or just below ground level, perhaps. I can't remember the exact story.
Mm-hmm.
So how did these guys survive, you know, 500,000 tons of material falling on them?
Mm-hmm. And you reminded me of the story of the firefighters. I saw this one video one time of these firefighters, these first responders that survived. Absolutely irate with Giuliani. Because their radios didn't work, because the firefighters were due to get new radios. So the proper procedure is to put out bids, you get at least three proposals, see what they have, you verify that they work. This did not happen. Giuliani got one of his cronies to supply them with radios that didn't work. And, you know, that was some time ago that I saw that video, but this was produced by firefighters themselves, and they were just very upset with the then mayor, who is like is supposedly now the media turned into some saintly hero.
He was
like,
man of the year or something, wasn't he? Yeah, he was made man of the year or something, wasn't he? I believe.
And then the thing was like we haven't spoken a word really about the building 7 where this command center was at. Hushman pointed out a lot of interesting things about that. And then I guess he was there, and I guess there was also witness testimony of a lot of dead bodies in WTC7 way before it was, as John Huss said, turned into a puddle of mud. And, you know, one thing was interesting. One time I saw so many little bits and pieces of the story floating around. Amy Goodman was right there on the ground when Building 7 went down. And one time she was cornered.
Oh, really?
Yes. Oh, yes. She was cornered one time. I saw this video. She was cornered by someone about that. You can see her. There's a video of her. She's right there. And she's, you know, obviously where the day is and the building is gone. And I guess the question was something about, you know, why haven't you been talking about the anomalies of Building 7? And her response was, I promise you, I didn't have anything to do with the destruction of Building 7. And that's all she said. You know,
wow.
So, I mean, here she is now. She's, I guess, the so-called progressives, you know, I tried to listen to her today. I couldn't, but, you know, it's just, it's amazing. I don't...
Well, this is it. You know, you sort of, I think there was an expectation, certainly when the Bush administration was still in power, that the left would be more sympathetic towards, you know, looking at the 9/11 evidence, the 9/11 truth, or whatever, however you want to phrase that. But it just, like you say, people like Amy Goodman were seemed to be just about as resistant to it as anybody else. And I think another example of that was, the two Naomis. I get them mixed up with Naomi Klein and another Naomi who's written books about, these sort of issues. And she gave a public presentation where she wouldn't talk about 9/11 issues. And Howard Zinn as well, I think, was another one where he wouldn't talk about it.
Yeah,
everyone expected him to be quite sympathetic to it, and he just said, "Oh, it's just baloney or something."
Hmm.
You know. So, but on and on, it seems like there is some very large scale psyop, which is using some very advanced techniques, and I don't just mean, specific TV broadcasts. I think there seems to be other stuff going on as well, which I would basically call, you know, overt and covert mind control.
That's one thing, too. I'm scrolling down Dr. Judy Wood's site about maybe almost two-thirds down. History repeats. This must be, yes, the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City, because I remember not too long ago, within the past week, somebody made a reference to Timothy McVeigh and the Murrah Building. And that, of course, probably 4 years ago, I had Charles Key, and, you know, the Oklahoma was upset about this. They went up to the state level. There was something about, because obviously, this little poop bomb on the street did not make this building go away. There were some similar damage. There was a testimony of another retired Air Force individual, you know, that was saying that the way the steel was cut and as far back into it as it was cut, it would have been impossible for the story to be true. And then they have this video of McVeigh walking away from the truck, and then afterwards these, I guess maybe Iraqi-looking people, because Father George had brought upwards of 5,000 Iraqi, I guess they had been in the military, to this country, and I think they were in that area, or somewhere around there. It's kind of an old story, you know, but, you know, these details are, it's there for people to look up, you know, if you might be interested.
Oh, yeah.
The billiard ball example.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, a lot of similarity between the Alpha P. Murrah building destruction, and I think the comparison that Dr. Wood has there is World Trade Center 6, where you've got these kind of vertical, cylindrical sort of cutouts, as it were, in the building. And you can see this quite well if you look at both the interior views and the aerial views. And I think there's, I don't know if Dr. Woods posted this on her site, but I've seen these other pictures of cars near the Alpha P. Murrah building with their trunks all open, as if something has affected the locks, you know, on the trunks, and then the trunks have just gone, you know, popped up. And that's obviously something that was seen with a lot of the cars at the World Trade Center as well, in that this energy field, it's really an interference field, we think, that affected metals selectively. So some metals were affected more readily than others. So that's why we think that some of the handles on the cars were destroyed and some of the lock catches were also, you know, dissociated or whatever happened to them, or I say melted, but not with heat, but with this cold process.
Okay, well, yes, just for saying, I found the clip, Building 7, no fires, just a minute, it's Lower Manhattan, and it's talking to the firefighter, and maybe we just maybe listen to that just for for a moment here. Let me turn this. Oops, let me get going from the beginning.
He's been down on the scene, and also going fast, followed by an enormous crash and an immediate explosion.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
We feel shockwaves, but we sort of...
I guess what happened is I have that the one video going that's a little bit... it would probably be the September clues. Pause that. Okay. And then go back to Building 7, no fire. Let me get that back to the start. And actually, let me just reload that. Yes, actually, I found this very quickly on BrassCheckTV.com. They have a 9/11 section. I've played quite a lot of interesting things from them. But yeah, here we listen to this. Now, it's Leslie Stahl, I do believe. Let's see here.
And I've got Don Daler here with me. We've been dividing up all the duties here, and he's been down to the scene. And also, J.D. Halperin, who said he's just a volunteer who came in from California and was around the area. I just wanted to know, how much fire is there? You said you were just at ground zero. How much fire is left?
Well, the Building 7, there was no fire there whatsoever, but there was one truck putting water on the building, but it's collapsed completely. And then the other building that there were some flames still coming up was in World Trade Center 1, but not a lot.
And you said you saw melted tour buses, melted cars?
The cars that were right down there, it was just unbelievable. They were twisted and melted into nothing. The debris is just unbelievable. And then you can see fire trucks and police vehicles that were down there early, that all their windows, the windshield are completely blown out, must have been from when debris dropped.
Yeah, I mean, Building 7, I don't know if you're aware, that Dr. Wood did recently, few months ago, post a study about Building 7.
Okay.
Because, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, it's got to be controlled demolition because, you know, it's the only thing that explains it.
Well, it's easy for us to get our mind around controlled demolition.
Pardon?
Well, it's much easier for us to get our mind around controlled demolition, you know, than...
Yes, absolutely. And what she decided to do, because as you probably know, the final report on World Trade Center 7 was posted by NIST.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the date. I think it was sort of the last quarter of last year. I think it was maybe September or October. I can't remember the exact date. Might have even been August. I can't remember. Dr. Wood had done a study to challenge their findings, and she then posted as a set of comments on the NIST website, and it was eventually posted on the NIST website. But one of the main things that she pointed out was that NIST had said in their report that the sort of destruction of Building 7 was almost silent.
Mm.
The videos that NIST watched said you could hear conversations with people down the street.
Exactly.
You know, whilst the building came down. And what they said was that this ruled out controlled demolition.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it had been controlled demolition, you would have heard the demolition explosives going off.
Mm-hmm.
And that was NIST's explanation,
mm-hmm.
which they claimed supported their thermal expansion theory,
mm-hmm.
which is very much a theory, of course, because thermal expansion does not cause a building to turn to dust.
Exactly.
Which is what Building 7 largely did. And as you mentioned earlier on, it produced this pile of mud.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're looking at again is some other type of use of the weapon in a different mode of destruction, it would seem. In other words, if the building was seemingly destroyed from the bottom, possibly,
mm-hmm.
or it was actually destroyed, what possibly may have happened is the building was actually destroyed over a period of time and then held there in the upright position.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it had actually been destroyed, and then when the appropriate point in cut time came, they flicked the switch and the building just fell. What was left of it, and it had already been processed or dissociated or dissolved or whatever, or justified, whatever term seems to fit. But the point is that if that building had fallen due to, you know, a couple of girders in the center, you know, sort of weakening, as NIST claimed, and then breaking, and then the rest sort of piling in on top of them, there would have been such an enormous clattering and banging of girders.
Oh,
it
yeah.
would have been like 100,000 trucks, you know, going past on the street. I mean, you know, if you're
exactly.
stood on the street and a 20-ton truck goes
exactly.
past and you're not looking, you know, say you've got your iPod on and you're walking down the street and a big truck comes past that you're not ready for, and it makes all the pavement shake, and you look round, you'll see this truck going past with its cargo full of junk or whatever it's carrying. But the people near Building 7, when this building came down, none of that was heard on any of the videos, none of the witnesses reported it. There was no noticeable impact, no sound, virtually silence. So what can cause that? Demolition explosives, thermal expansion causing the collapse?
Uh-huh.
None of those fit. None of those fit the evidence.
That's a very, very good common sense observation. Say a dump truck, which basically can haul maybe 20 tons... Or well, let me think. Actually, I should know this. Basically, I say 20 tons of material, and you know, when it dumps, it's going to make noise. That's just now each building 500,000 tons. That's a lot of dump trucks.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's a lot of material.
Yeah.
Also, in this a Brass Tech TV site, and maybe it would be appropriate to mention this gentleman's name. Now, I think this is about a year old. I was trying to find the exact date, but I think it's about a year old. This is brasschecktv.com/page/424.html, and it's key 9/11 eyewitness quote commits suicide. It's a brief video, but it's a little bit of text here. It needs to set it up. It says bombs in the basement. The Daily News reported yesterday that Kenny Johanneman, a key witness in the WTC 9/11 bombings, recently committed suicide. I call him a key witness because in spite of aggressive prodding from reporters about, quote, the planes, he clearly called it what happened on the upper floors of the World Trade Center. Explosions. More important, Johanneman reported a massive explosion in the basement of one of the Twin Towers and rescuing someone who received full body burns from an explosion that took place at the base, not the top of the building. And maybe stop there for a minute. It's also almost an identical story of William Rodriguez. Now, I don't know what's happened with him, but let me just continue here. The Daily News obscured this part of the story in their report today. The suicide note purportedly left by Johanneman stated that he had lost friends and family, quote, over his, quote, drinking, which the letter attributes to his depression since 9/11. Here is the entire text of the note as reported in the Daily News. And I have to do my... this is WSHC Shepherdstown, and we're speaking with Mr. Andrew Johnson, for calling us very, very well from the UK. And I was trying to say graciously or something like that, but and his site is checktheevidence.com. Okay, and well, you're on a Skype connection, so it's not, not too bad for you, but really do appreciate this. Okay, so this is the suicide, purported the suicide note of this gentleman, Kenny Johanneman. The reason I killed myself was because I was getting evicted and can't handle homelessness. I was also very depressed since 9/11. I've been drinking way too much, and it's ruined my life. I've lost friends and family over drinking, and I'm very lonely. There is nothing left for me to be happy about other than my cat. Sounds weird, but it's true. I just wanted to say I'm sorry to the number two, any people I ever hurt in my life. I really was a good person when I wasn't drinking. I hope people remember that. Goodbye, with 3 exclamation points. Kenny Johanneman. And then, of course, the Brass Check TV commentary. I wonder if the person who wrote the suicide note bothered to spend any time listening to Johanneman speak. Johanneman had a large extended family and large social network, which, according to his cousin Gerald Maya, universally held him in high regard. Maya had offered him a place to live. You have to ask yourself two things. Would a man shoot himself in the head because he faced eviction when he had a family and social safety net like that? Would someone as well-spoken as Johanneman demonstrated himself to be on live TV write a suicide note that sounds more like a teenage boy's text message than a grown man's final statement? Keep in mind that there are other people more visible than Johanneman who are actively telling the same story he did in public venues. You can bet that Johanneman's, quote, suicide has sent them a message loud and clear about their safety or lack of it. In case you were concerned about them, these eyewitnesses are alive and well. There's another link to I saw the planes and blah blah blah. Okay, but let's just play this. This is just had happened. 9/11 eyewitness to the Twin Towers explosion. Kenny Johanneman.
We
We should be able to hear what this man is saying now.
Anything else that you saw? Were you there for the second hit by the plane?
Yes. About 10 minutes later, the second building went off.
Did you see it?
Yes, I saw it. It just blew up. A big explosion. People started running. It was just chaos everywhere. People jumping out. People just kept jumping and jumping and jumping. And you could still see they were alive because they were flailing around.
The FBI has already stepped in to investigate. It could be possibly a terrorist strike.
It could be. It could be because it was the first one went off, and then 10 minutes later, this just blew up out of nowhere.
Hard to think that that would just be accidental.
No, I don't think it would be accidental.
Back it up, folks. Back it up.
You're Kenny?
Jehanneman.
Spell your name.
J-O-H-A-N-N-E-M-A-N-N.
And you were working there?
Yes, I was right there. I was down in the basement, came down, all of a sudden the elevator blew up, smoke. I dragged the guy out, his skin was hanging off, and I dragged him out, and I helped him out to the ambulance.
Thank you, right?
And it is a rather odd coincidence about the story, because when I first heard about that and I hadn't seen the video, I thought it was, you know, William Rodriguez. Mm. But, you know, I know.
Yes, I thought that too.
I don't know what's happened with him or, you know, what's going on there, but he was.
Well, William Rodriguez is another interesting case, which he actually stayed at my house, would you believe?
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah, because he did a UK tour in February 2007.
Okay.
And that was at the time when I just really started to realize that, and I'd become aware of Dr. Wood's research. So this was probably about 2 or 3 months after I'd sort of first got into that.
Mm-hmm.
And, he came over to England for this tour, and I actually booked two sort of fairly local venues for him to speak at. And we have local radio stations here too. We have a local radio station called BBC Radio Derby. You know, it's part of the BBC network, but at a local level. And I actually got I rang them up and said that William Rodriguez was coming, and, you know, told them his story, or they found it out from the webpage or something. And, I took him over there, and we took him in and did an interview there for Radio Derby, which I think was broadcast the next day. They mm-hmm. pre-recorded it. But during the course of that interview, he actually named Doctors Wood and Reynolds as those who are putting out disinformation.
Really?
And he seemed to know all about CGI and directed energy weapons, or at least he knew what the abbreviations meant.
Really?
And then the next day, it was a Saturday, we went down to Birmingham, which is a sort of large city in the middle of England.
Mm-hmm.
And I booked a venue there, you know, at my own expense, quite a considerable expense, I have to say.
Mm, yes.
I took him down there, and he went on to BBC Radio Birmingham as well, the other local one.
Okay.
And he said similar things there. And then he said at the presentation that there was a lot of disinformation being put out about 9/11, and a lot of it was coming from Dr. Morgan Reynolds and Dr. Judy Wood.
Really?
And he said this at the presentation. I was pretty shocked by this because, you know, it's one thing to say that there's disinformation coming out,
mm-hmm.
and to just make a blanket statement just naming those two individuals.
Exactly.
Not really, he didn't really go into any details to why we thought it was disinformation. He didn't say, well, they're wrong because of this study or that study or this evidence or that evidence. He didn't go into any of that. He just made it as a bald statement, really.
Mm-hmm.
And so that made me very suspicious. And he also mentioned during this talk that he said that.
Sorry.
It's okay. That was McIntyre, wasn't it? What was it?
I had inadvertently started another.
No, that wasn't Jay. I'm recognizing the audio clip. That's the one from the Bush seeing the first impact, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I see, maybe we'll play it in a minute. It's only a minute. It's like a minute and 11 seconds.
Yeah.
But you know, this is a very, very interesting thing about Rodriguez, because the similarity in the stories between Johanneman is obvious. This video, it's right there. He's obviously telling, he's there on the ground, and it shows him coming out. Now, we never saw Rodriguez. Rodriguez has just sort of kind of appeared after the fact with the same story.
Yes,
so did. Maybe the point was for him to take the real story of Johanneman and then maybe tweak something else, or, you know.
I think that's a possibility. I don't know how, you know, that's obviously speculation, but the point that's also worth mentioning, and Rodriguez makes no secret of this, did you know who Rodriguez used to work with?
No.
James Randi. James Randi. this arch debunker of psychic phenomena.
Really?
Rodriguez used to work with James Randi as a magician's assistant.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Well, that's getting wow. Huh.
And he doesn't make a secret of that. You go and check out James Randi.
So
this, again, we're back to the psychological operation.
Yes.
But I believe that William Rodriguez, and the evidence supports this conclusion, was involved with the PSYOP of the 9/11 truth movement.
Mm-hmm.
How much his story may be true, some of his World Trade Center story may be true. He may have even been there, you know, but I don't know. I just don't understand certain aspects of his story.
Mm-hmm.
For example, he claims that he was pulled out from under a truck and the CNN crew were filming near him and they saw him go under the truck, and when the tower came down, they knew he was still there, so they knew to direct rescue workers to get him out. But if that's true,
okay.
I may not have got all the details right, but that apparently is roughly his story. But if that is true, and he was under the dust for a few minutes or a few hours, then he should have suffered from quite bad respiratory problems.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, he did a 20-day speaking tour, speaking 20 days out of 30. I witnessed him at two talks where he spoke for almost 2 hours at a stretch, not a cough, not a sneeze, you know.
And that was the issue with these first responders and original that video I alluded to a little while back about Giuliani, was that these people were dying. This one man had oxygen tubes up his nose, you know, and the people that were on the ground, of course, that could have been part of the reason. You know, the buildings were completely unprofitable. They had so much asbestos in them that something was going to have to be done with them. And you know, that's just one interesting aspect of the story. But maybe I'll play this a 1 minute, Bush new thing.
And you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to wonder exactly what President George W. Bush knew about the attack and when he knew it. According to the official White House version, it was at this moment in a Florida classroom that Bush learned the second plane had hit the World Trade Center and that the U.S. was under attack. But here's what George Bush himself said almost 3 months later when asked about September 11th.
I was sitting outside the classroom waiting to go in, and I saw an airplane hit the tower. TV was obviously on, and I used to fly myself, and I said, well, there's one terrible pilot. And I said it must have been a horrible accident. But I was whisked off there. I didn't have much time to think about it.
Now, wait a minute. George Bush was told about the second plane while he was inside the classroom. So you just heard him describe seeing the first plane crash on television that day. But that's impossible. No one saw the first plane crash on TV on September the 11th because the videotape of it didn't surface until the next day. So how could George Bush have seen what he said he saw?
Maybe speak to the Nade brothers video. What do you think about that?
Oh yeah, that's also very interesting, and Simon Schack has done quite a good analysis of that as well, certain parts of it. And if you look at the video close up, you'll see that just after the supposed first impact, there is three edits within the space of about 10 seconds of footage. It's very, very peculiar. And also, Simon Schack has done a close analysis of the plane supposedly going in, and it shows the sort of this hole appearing after this explosion, and then there's a secondary explosion. You can see the line of flame coming out, or what appears to be flame coming out, you know, after the plane sort of seems to have disappeared. It's like, as he points out, it's like there was some explosive type of thing. He thinks it's explosives, but I, you know, looking at the magnetometer data that we mentioned before, it looks like a use of the weapon has induced this. Could it be a real fire coming out? I don't know. Could it be a cold fire, some type of energy effect? I'm not sure. But we can clearly see when you slow this video down that the way that this flame or whatever it is appears isn't consistent with the crash.
Mm-hmm.
It's not consistent. And actually, he notes that the hole is substantially wider than the plane as well. He points that out. He draws this out. And that's not in the main September Blues film. That's in a separate little bit of film he's done, which is called either the Norday Brothers or 9/11 Amateur,
uh-huh.
Part Two or something. You'll find it if you Google it. I'm sure. But the circumstances. I mean that particular street corner, as I understand it, I haven't checked this for a long time, but my understanding is that the street corner from where the Norday brothers filmed this supposed first plane crash is one of only about three locations in New York where you can, at street level, you can see that face of the building at that point. And they were in precisely the right place to film it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very, the chances of that happening.
Interesting coincidence.
It is very strange. You put all these things together that mm-hmm. we've been talking about,
mm-hmm.
and you cannot believe that it's this sophisticated, that mm. this planning, this much orchestration, down to things like we just said, the point of Rodriguez, being involved with it, mm. and the point of this, the Norday brothers being somehow involved with it mm-hmm. by being on the right street corner at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
How can you have this level of control and orchestration?
Mm-hmm.
It boggles your mind, really, even if you take the most conspiratorial view that you can imagine,
mm-hmm.
it still boggles even that.
Well, the official story, of course, is a wild conspiracy theory. I mean, we have to admit
exactly.
that.
Exactly, yes.
And,
yes,
also the fake Bin Laden tapes. I mean, it's just amazing. Also at BrassTechTV.com, there's a couple short videos here, and the text is, how much plainer does it have to get? There's only one piece of, quote, evidence that Osama bin Laden masterminded the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. It's the so-called, quote, confession video found conveniently in an abandoned house in Afghanistan. There's one problem with the video. It's obviously not of bin Laden. How can this nonsense be accepted as evidence to justify two wars, constitution shredding, and hundreds of billions of dollars of bogus security expenditures? Thank the U.S. news media for this one. Without their ongoing complicity, this whole house of cards would come tumbling down and we'd be much closer to identifying the real murderers. Now, the first video, interestingly enough, is a two-minute video, but that's got to be Stephen Jones. Now, I haven't actually watched this. I don't know what he's saying, but maybe it's only a couple minutes here. Let's see what he's...
Well, try it.
See what he's saying. I don't know.
Now, we did some analysis. I work with a student on this because it looks pretty obvious, but if you do some detailed work on it, we looked at the length of the nose and nose to the width. We looked at the nose-ear distance as well. This guy's ear is tilted quite a bit. The picture is not real clear, unfortunately, from this, but it's clear enough. This ratio is about half of Al Jazeera's. This is the Osama bin Laden released by the Pentagon and the Bush administration in December. Now, I don't know why more people didn't say, wait a minute, that's not bin Laden. But here's what bin Laden himself said 5 days and then was at 17 days after 9/11. He said, I stress that I have not carried out this act. This is a videotape now. And Al Jazeera, yes, and this is the fellow, the one that we're all familiar with, which appears to have been carried out by individuals with their own motivation. Then on the 28th of September, just, 17 days after 9/11, I have already said I am not involved in the 11 September attacks in the United States. As a Muslim, I try my best to avoid telling a lie. Now, this is an admission by FBI Director Robert Mueller. The hijackers left no paper trail in our investigation. We have not uncovered a single piece of paper either here in the U.S. or in the treasure trove of information that's turned up in Afghanistan or elsewhere. Not a single piece of paper that mentioned any aspect of the September 11th plot. Basically, all they had is this so-called confession tape, which isn't even bin Laden. There are many questions about that tape, by the way. It doesn't ring true to the Muslim religion, the statements made there.
So that's kind of interesting. That's Stephen Jones handling, obviously, what is the truth. It's like, it kind of makes you remember, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. You can tell the truth, but not but still lie, you know.
Yeah. I think that illustrates a good point, because, you know, he's obviously pointing out the fakery with the Bin Laden tape and the
uh-huh.
Bin Laden story,
yeah.
which is good, and, you know, I think both of us would agree with him on that.
Oh, absolutely. It's obvious. The pictures
yeah, and but then when you take that further and you uncover a bit more about Stephen E. Jones, and you realize, for example, that he'd done a paper on neuron-catalyzed cold fusion in 1989,
that's
which he then published the day before Pons and Fleischmann published their cold fusion research,
mm-hmm.
because he was tipped off by somebody in the Department of Energy that was going to happen. And then Dr. Eugene Malov wrote a book called Fire from Ice about the cold fusion story. He wrote that and published it in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen E. Jones is mentioned on 100 pages of that book in relation to the cold fusion cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
And now we see Steve Jones coming out, wheeled out in 2005, about 18 months after the death of Eugene Malov, to bring out this supposed thermite story. So, you know, Steve Jones gains credibility in the same way as Baker did by sort of presenting things like the Bin Laden tape analysis and making a sort of reasonably good job at that and getting to focus on the evidence. But then he uses his credibility card at that point to distract you from looking at the Burke and Aaron evidence,
mm-hmm.
and the Hutchinson effect evidence and the energy issues.
There.
So, you know, you're seeing there the way that this works is that somebody is wheeled out, they're given some information to put out, or they decide to put out certain information to gain their credibility, and then they use that credibility to lead a group of people off into a ditch.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, there's another one. This is a minute and 33 of Bush. Where's Osama? Bush, I don't care. If the unproven government theory that Osama bin Laden masterminded the 9/11 attacks, why has he not been captured and brought to justice? After all, hundreds of billions of dollars have been spent, hundreds of thousands of people have lost their lives, and the U.S. Constitution has been shredded to deal with the, quote, threat posed by Osama bin Laden and other wild-eyed Middle Eastern terrorists. From this video, it is clear that taking bin Laden out of circulation is not only a priority for Bush. Bush is not even remotely interested in the topic and visibly contemptuous of those who are. Why Bush was not impeached within a week of making the statement and then tried, found guilty of treason and hung by lawful court order, I'll never understand. Why there are still millions of Americans who look to this fraud and his minions as their source of security in the world is similarly profound mystery. Too hard on Bush? This is a man who, as governor of Texas, was a one-man cheerleading squad for capital punishment. Treason is a capital offense. A president who actively undermines the Constitution and willfully permits the country's chief enemy to run wild is a traitor.
Mm. I think that's all true, but again, it's taking the attention off the global group that's manipulating everything.
Yes.
You know, this is my big sort of thing, which I keep telling people now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it was quite early on in 9/11 research that I came across a little statement by Dr. Faz, I think they call him Faz Khan, and he said that we have to sort of try and get away from the idea of nation states sometimes, because there's a global group at work in this. You know, the global group is doing the chemtrailing, the global group has coordinated the 9/11 cover-up and continue to do so through the global media network.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Obama has certainly used this line, the One World Order, and he said something, you know, it stuck in my mind. I think I even heard it, I don't know if I heard it live, but it was something, it was very recent. I think it probably had to be I should have just written it down. Of course, all the stuff I've looked into. He said something specifically about a global regime.
Mm. Yeah, well, David Ray Griffin does as well. David Ray Griffin, the author of, you know, New Pearl Harbor and New Pearl Harbor Revisited, talks about global democracy being the solution to our current problems. You know, and the guy who wrote the foreword to his first book, Richard Falk, however you pronounce it, he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people like Griffin and him are happy to say, oh, you know, we need a new investigation into 9/11, so let's have one. But they don't really say what they think happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they don't look at all the evidence.
I don't know. I mean, it's just granted, we've broached quite a lot of topics, but really haven't delved into near as deeply as they could be looked into. You know, the story is just so massive, and again, saying exactly what did happen is really not our prerogative, because we know we have shown, and millions of people have shown, or a lot of people have shown, that the official story is demonstrably false. And isn't that enough?
This is it. I mean, some people, I have disagreements in this, you know, people here that, oh, we just need to show the official story is false.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to, you know, the only way that is good in a legal sense is you can set Bin Laden off the hook, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what you can prove that the official story is false and Bin Laden's not guilty,
mm-hmm.
but you can't then go on to prove who did, you know, who is responsible. So I think we do need to get that, you know, aim in mind. And also, as I've said before, and I'll say it again,
uh-huh.
once you look at the evidence that Dr. Wood has posted and uncovered,
mm-hmm.
it leads you to the understanding that free energy technology works, and not only that it works, but the reason why we haven't got it is because it's been weaponized. That's one of the reasons why we haven't got access to free energy technology. It's not because they've kept it secret to keep it from the terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
It's because the terrorists have already got it, and they used it on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
That is the point I really, you know, like to emphasize for people. If you go and study the evidence, that is the conclusion I think you will come to.
There's certainly no doubt that there was a terrorist attack. That's not in question.
Yeah, and the terrorists have got the free energy technology, and they were able to use it very effectively.
Mm-hmm.
If you look, then you begin to look at the wider ramifications of that. You know, what I did just before the end of last year was I wrote some letters, because what I realized over time was that we think of nuclear weapons as being this terrible, terrible threat to our safety.
Mm-hmm.
But then you look at what happened to the World Trade Center towers, and that means that somebody here on Earth
mm-hmm.
has got the technology to turn these two buildings to dust in 10 seconds each.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally way beyond anything to do with nuclear weapons.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, nuclear weapons are obsolete as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
It's not that they're not a threat. Obviously, they can still do a lot of damage,
mm-hmm.
And then destroy the planet in their own right.
Mm-hmm.
But we cannot overlook this new weapon system that's come online and was used on 9/11,
mm-hmm.
and any military people who are overlooking that, they're missing the point.
Well, this was Ronald Reagan's big thing, the Star Wars. You know, we have all this problem with the missiles potentially raining down on us, so we need to take care of them. And apparently, the technology exists. And all this fuss about North Korea and their little rocket thing, you know, whatever. You know, I mean, calling them a threat to whom? You know, I mean, we still have, you know, we're going down the tubes. Of course, you know, planned with the confessions of an economic hitman. You know, these people are expert at crashing economies and taking control of societies, and it's just the same thing now in the first world.
Well, that's it, and I think what's happening is we're being manipulated in so many ways. One of which is to say that the enemies of the North Koreans, or the enemies of the Russians, or the enemies of the Iraqis, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So we're being told about all these enemies that we have,
mm-hmm.
but the real enemy is hidden. We don't know who the real enemy is. And the real enemy is actually already won battle it is for the control of planet Earth. They have no battle other than keeping us in a state of ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
That is now their battle.
Mm-hmm.
But the battle, to me, as I see it, is that there are people now who are choosing knowledge rather than ignorance. Not many, only a small number.
Mm.
But it's those people who are going to be the threat to this global control group, whoever they are, or maybe they're more than one, and they're, you know, some people say it's the Rockefellers, and the Rothschilds have got, you know, one group's got a technology, and they've got a different technology and stuff like this.
Mm.
Yeah, could be that. There could be more than one group, but the group is hidden. There is a shadow government.
It's admitted.
We don't know who the members are, you know, but it's real and it's here, and we have to come to terms with it if we want to, you know, get anywhere. Because if we just go on with all these fake conflicts,
mm-hmm.
investing our time, energy, and money
mm-hmm.
in all these fake conflicts, we're not going to progress as a species.
Well, it's, I guess the sort of obvious story is the American Revolution getting away from control of Great Britain. It was a very, very small percentage of the people over here in this country, because most people were happy being British subjects, you know, and it was like, they, yes. You know, what is this revolution? You know, we don't need to. And it certainly does not take a majority. You know, like you're saying, enough people, and I guess on all these different stories, you know, gone, like the Kennedy thing, and all of this business, it sort of gives me a little bit of optimism and hope about the fact that the individuals who perpetrated these things are very interested in the truth not getting out. So that is their downfall, because I guess, you know, David Icke showed, you know, they can't. Apparently, they do need some of us around, you know, where the there are money makers, there are cash cows, as it were. So, you know, I don't know, and I guess what I briefly alluded to, which I guess was a mistake on mine. I said something earlier to a group of people, and it was just the wrong setting in the wrong way, and I just jumped right to the chase. You know, the whole thing's false. There were no planes. Obviously, the buildings didn't fall down, and they're like, what? You know, it was like I was kind of attacked. You know, and I should have done it. And I apologize. I doubt any of them are listening anyway. But I think I still did pretty well, because although interestingly enough, there was one person who was It was probably two people. I got some dirty looks from a couple others, but there was one individual right next to me, and she was like, wait a minute. She was like, just had an open mind. And I gave her your website and Dr. Judy Wood's website, and she was going to look into it. So, yeah, I don't know what happened, but, you know, I guess and that's why I do this. And I guess, I don't know, there was going to be someone, I guess he's not coming in, so I guess maybe we could go on, if you care, till 7. I wanted to make room for, there was a gentleman who was going to, be in town here, a musician, but I don't know. I mean, you know,
we can go on for a few minutes if
you want.
I mean, break off whenever you want, you know.
I'm not being forcibly removed from the building, but okay. Yeah, but my official time is 5 to 7. We did get on a little bit early, but you know, maybe I guess we could just, you know, wherever we want to go with it. I mean, I guess if anybody possibly would want to, my email is for the site, for the program is innerviews897@yahoo. Do you have an easy email? Well, you can go to your site, of course, checktheevidence.com. I'm sure, I think you have a link.
Yeah, it's probably easier to go onto there's a contact button.
Yes.
And they can click on there, and that'll come straight through to me. So they could use that if they wanted to send me an email. Fine, yeah, no problem.
And you do have a lot of covers. Fetzer. Actually, you know, Fetzer was I think I mentioned this before. Fetzer was my first guest in '04, January of '04, and he's just got just absolutely infinitesimally refined points of the JFK assassination, and we went on and on and on and on about that, and then it just sort of naturally flows into the psyops of 9/11. And but maybe briefly now, it doesn't matter if you don't want to mention much about it, but he started at some point, but it's weird because he introduced me to the work of Dr. Judy Wood. I remember him saying something about the destruction of the WTC buildings points to the effects of not one single causal mechanism, to sort of quote him. And then, so what happened though? Because
Fletcher is a very interesting case, and I think in summary, I think it's quite similar to what happened with Stephen E. Jones. In other words, Fetzer had obviously done a lot of research, and I've written articles about this, and I've corresponded with him a lot.
Uh-huh.
And he invited me, along with Steve Jones, to be in this 9/11 scholars group. You know, I've written articles about this as well. Mm-hmm. And then later, Fetzer invited me, of all people. You know, me, I've just got a bachelor's degree. I don't have any advanced degrees like Dr. Woodhouse. I don't have any particularly special qualifications. You know, my special area of expertise, if I have one, is C programming, or the C programming language. That's the thing that I did professionally for the longest time, about 5 years.
C+.
You know, branched off into other areas and things since then. But, you know, how do you relate C programming to 9/11? Well, you don't, you know, basically. So, nevertheless, Fetzer invited me onto the steering committee of this scholars group, and if you take that as a measure of the credibility of that group, I think, you know, you're pretty much, you know, that's a good gauge. In other words, if I'd been some person with a wide political knowledge or, you know, a wide knowledge of structural engineering or, you know, plane mechanics or aerodynamics or something like that, then you might see that I'd be an asset to scholars for 9/11 truth academically or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just a very average sort of person, you know. So why is he inviting me onto the steering committee? I couldn't see a reason for this, really. I mean, I said I'd do it, not that it involved doing anything, but... So anyway, you know, but I think the example that is the same again, that he gained a lot of credibility with his research into the Kennedy assassination,
mm-hmm.
And then he used that to attract people to him with 9/11 research,
mm-hmm.
and then he promoted Dr. Wood's research, but only initially he didn't promote Dr. Wood's research. He actually threw Morgan Reynolds and Judy Wood out of the scholars group.
Oh, really?
Because they were talking about these ridiculous theories to do with the planes not hitting the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he actually expelled them from the scholars group.
Really?
But then about 6 months or a year later, I can't remember the exact time period that elapsed, he then decided to have Dr. Judy Wood on his program to talk about her directed energy weapons research, which has kind of matured a bit by then.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started promoting her. But then he kept on doing that. Right up until the time we started talking about the Hutchison effect.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we started talking about the Hutchison effect, or she did, and I was sort of in the background of that, or on the sidelines of it, or whatever, however you want to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started saying, oh no, that we're trying to, Ace Baker says John Hutchison's a fraud. You know? Because Ace Baker's an expert in digital processing.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting these ridiculous things being said and evidence being ignored. You know, I sent in the documents which showed that the military-industrial complex knew full well what John Hutchison was up to, because Colonel John Alexander visited John Hutchison in 1983, and John Alexander is the head of the non-lethal weapons program. You know, John Alexander makes no secret that he visited John Hutchison in 1983. We've got the documents which show the team from the Los Alamos National Laboratories,
mm-hmm.
which Steve Jones is associated with, by the way, visited John Hutchison in 1983. We've got all that evidence, and I've said that to professors as, look, John Hutchison isn't a fraud. The evidence suggests that Ace Baker is wrong. We've got 500 pounds of anomalous metal samples. We've got documents. We've got John has submitted an affidavit to the court case,
mm-hmm.
which means that if John is telling, you know, is telling lies, he's opening himself up to prosecution in the court system by submitting a false affidavit.
Mm-hmm.
So we had all that evidence, but that wasn't good enough for Fetzer. He ends up calling me a child.
Really?
You know, in email. This is all in the articles that I've written. And I've got the emails to prove all this. You know, I've got the audios of the broadcast. We then start talking about the hurricane. Fetzer then misquotes that research and says, Dr. Wood says that Hurricane Aaron was a power source for the weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, that's not correct.
Mm-hmm.
That is not correct at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we have somebody like Fetzer, who you said a few minutes ago had a very specific skill at quoting detail after detail, you know, bringing things off in a very fine level of detail, and yet he is unable to quote correctly what Dr. Wood has said about Hurricane Aaron, which was to do with field effects. And Hurricane Aaron could have provided a field component for the weapon to work in a particular way or in a particular mode.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that wasn't what Fetzer described it as. He described that Hurricane Aaron was, Dr. Wood had said it was a power source for the weapon. No, we didn't say it was a power source, because we had no evidence that that was true. It seems to be to do with field effects, and we'd explained this on broadcast, but yet Fetzer couldn't get that right. He couldn't quote that. So that to me is a red flag, because we know that we must be on the right track, because I think he is deliberately misquoting that. Now, I can't prove that, obviously, but that's what it looks like if you look at all the other evidence. He's deliberately misquoting things to muddle things up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because again, we're muddling up the free energy issue and the weather control.
Mm-hmm.
That has to be kept in the realms of impossibility.
And I think that Alex Jones and the Genesis Communication Network, I guess, I haven't looked at them in months and months. I guess, you know, Fetzer was on, he moved on. I don't know if you saw his program
Moved on to another network now. He's moved on to, it's called something like, he's got a show called The Real Deal. And it's on the, I forget the name of the network now.
Okay.
If you just that's a real deal. I think it might be WTPRM, We the People Radio Network.
Uh-huh.
It might be that network, or it might be something underground radio or something. But anyway, yeah, Alex Jones is another one, because I posted a short article about him. If you Google Alex Jones, just Google Alex Jones, it'll come up with the article I posted. And he has this rant against no-planers and space beamers, as he calls them. And he said, he doesn't mention any names, but he says that they will, you know, they will viciously attack him, and they're vicious, and they lie, and they cheat.
Mm-hmm.
And he just uses this sort of blanket term
exactly
to cover these people.
Well, that was, you know, the video, it's easy to find. I guess it probably it's still there. And it's maybe the language is a little you go on YouTube and you search for Alex Jones is a Big Fat Liar, and it just clearly shows. It shows the fake video. And then just as you're saying, you know, Alex Jones is saying, you know, I have distant cousins and relatives and people that saw the planes, and real planes hit, and there were no space beams, and let's say Snoopy did it, and all this kind of stuff. You know, and Alex Jones, I haven't listened to him. I cannot stomach any of the kind of thing. Now, of course, now again, maybe very well be that the majority of what he puts out there is correct. But, you know, actually, now this was some years ago. I tried to get him as a guest on this program, and I went through the various things, and he was going to call in, and one time, he's very, very hot-headed. I mean, he's got the, he reminds me of a 2-year-old. I mean, he's an intelligent individual, but, you know, one time, of course, the phone patch was a little bit less, it didn't work, and he didn't call back, but the one time, you know, and he did get through, okay, and he had said he was going to be on my program. Now, he was about maybe 10 minutes, okay. During that entire time, he was constantly answering his cell phone, okay? He was in the process of launching one of those websites, you know, something about Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, Arnold Exposed.
Arnold Exposed, yeah.
And it was just, you know, I mean, like, my God, he can't, you know, I mean, even if he had 10 minutes, that's all he had. Couldn't he just, you know, talk for, you know, 10 minutes? And it's just so his whole, and I think I still have a copy of that somewhere, it was just very arrogant and egotistical, and, you know, so, I mean, that was just, it was just ridiculous.
It's a shame, yeah, you know, and I think, he's another example where he's gained a lot of credibility with a lot of the good stuff that he's put out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the very interesting things like the Bohemian Grove infiltration, that was very interesting, but, I mean, there's something I found out about that as well, because have you seen that, the Bohemian Grove infiltration?
Familiar with it, I haven't watched it, but then somebody was saying that there was an encounter he had with it was some relatively famous journalist, I think is still out there,
David Gergen?
Yes.
Yeah, he was some type of presidential advisor, wasn't he? I don't know if
yes,
he was a journalist.
That's true. Okay, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah,
I just remember him on one of those round table talk shows where they'd sit around, you know, years ago and talk, whatever.
Yeah, that's right. And he ambushed him, and he got him to admit, you know, that he did attend the Bohemian Grove ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
And then David Gergen got quite irate with Alex Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a bit of it's an interesting sequence, you know. And I smiled when I saw Alex Jones doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And like you say, you know, we were saying some of the stuff he puts out is very interesting, and it seems to be quite good. And that is a case in point. That is a very interesting bit of footage you got there. The Bohemian Grove infiltration, where he filmed inside, that was apparently set up by John Ronson, a chap called John Ronson.
Okay.
And John Ronson is a UK journalist, and he writes for the Guardian newspaper occasionally. And, you know, that's one of the main national daily newspapers in Britain. There's a big readership, or fairly big anyway, for the UK. You know, so he apparently set up the infiltration of Bohemian Grove to get Alex Jones in. Now, John Ronson came onto our UK 9/11 Truth Forum, this was a couple of years ago, and some of the posters on there were very abusive towards him, saying that it was just a media, you know, sort of shill and all this sort of thing, and saying some quite rude and unpleasant things to him. And I thought, well, this wasn't very good, because, you know, if you want to get a mainstream journalist interested in reporting about some of the 9/11 evidence, then this isn't a good way to do it. So I posted some stuff up there saying to him, well, look, you know, John, you just got to look at the evidence, and you know, if you want to sort of look at this evidence and that evidence, this is, these are good places to look, and that's basically what I posted.
Mm-hmm.
And then he posted underneath, he sort of said something along the lines of, you know, you can still find these posts actually, and he said, oh, you know, Andrew sounds like a fairly reasonable sort of guy, you know, and then he said he would contact me to do something for an interview or for a piece, and I thought, yeah, well, fine, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
And he has his own forum, johnronson.com, I think it is, JohnRonson.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on his forum, and I signed up, and I sent him a personal message on the forum to say, well, if you wanted to contact me, you know, I'd be happy to speak to him, and, you know, here's my telephone number, and blah, blah, blah. But he never contacted me. And even though on the forum he said I sounded like quite a reasonable sort of person and that, and
mm-hmm.
I wasn't rude to him.
Mm-hmm.
He never contacted me. Mm-hmm. 3 months after the sequence of posts on the forum, he posted an article in The Guardian about the 9/11 Truth Movement, saying what a bunch of hostile, sort of irate, angry
mm-hmm.
people they
mm-hmm.
were, who were just talking about baseless conspiracy theories.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically the summary of his article.
Mm-hmm.
And he referenced a few posts from the forum.
Okay.
Who had called him a shill and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that he'd got exactly what he came for. He'd come onto the forum to get some negative posts, and he just chose to write about those. He didn't write about any of the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, he'd done his job. He'd got what he needed. So, you know, I then became very suspicious that he should be involved in getting Alex Jones into Bohemian Grove.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, when does John Ronson next crop up?
Mm-hmm.
It's in chaperoning Robbie Williams, who's a very famous British singer, who was in the group Take That, you know, multi-million seller in England,
right.
Very, very popular media figure. Robbie Williams, he got interested in UFOs and aliens,
mm-hmm.
and John Ronson chaperoned him to the Laughlin Nevada conference in 2007. So it's like he was going around people
mm-hmm.
and trying to sort of herd them again,
mm-hmm.
you know. And make sure he was keeping tabs for the media on these various things like, the Alex Jones thing and the 9/11 thing, and now Robbie Williams getting involved in the UFO scene that he has become.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all these strange connections.
One thing I wanted to touch on, I guess if you did some research, you could probably come up with quite a few lists. There was, I think, one in Australia, one. There have been quite a number of mass shootings around the world in different places. There's a few of them in the United States. And right away, people that checked the evidence pointed out a lot of things about the story that seemed very odd and very wrong. And, of course, right away, the people that are promoting in this country the Second Amendment protected rights, that if one of those people, one of the victims, had their own method of defending themselves, shoot back, then it wouldn't have happened. So, and I guess we had a recent, not too long ago, the anniversary in Blacksburg, Virginia, a little ways south of here, at Virginia Tech, of the shooting. And maybe just to touch on those points, there's some things wrong with the story. Also, there's a very interesting coincidence that those buildings that those things took place were where Dr. Judy Wood not only she taught there, didn't she? Or do you think?
Well, my understanding is that is correct. That the actual buildings where the shootings took place had a very sort of significant, very high level of significance to personally to Dr. Judy Wood, as you said, where she studied and taught some of her classes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as you pointed out, there were strange, you know, irregularities in the story, like the guy sort of came onto campus apparently with a gun, then he did some of the shootings, and then he recorded a videotape of it, and then he went home,
mm-hmm.
posted the videotape, and, you know, put it onto his computer or something, or put it in a postbox, I can't remember, or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went back to the campus with another gun and did some more shooting. You know, and the campus security apparently was on a lot of them had been sent on holiday or something, or, you know, they'd gone off duty or something.
Mm-hmm.
Some very strange anomalies like that. and I believe that a lot of these people have been shown to be on antidepressant drugs.
Oh, yes.
At the time of the shooting, and, you know.
Well, yeah, there's lots of cases. There was a case, a woman killed her children. That was, I think, in Texas some time ago, and that was the case. She'd been on these psychotropics and then immediately removed. And then that's another very large, unfortunate subject about these, you know, this drugging. You know, they talk about drug wars and don't do drugs. How many people now are just pumped full of these horrible substances, you know? And, of course, you go to any psychiatrist, which is, they're basically witch doctors, I guess, and you will leave with a prescription for some possibly psychotropic substance. And then, of course, now what they've done is a lot of them have gotten a bad rap, so they've just changed the packaging and the name, but it's the exact same thing.
That's right. You know, the Me Too drugs, as they're called, where they produce a new drug the same as the old one, with just, like, you know, an extra gram of sugar added to each tablet or something like that, or an extra gram of sugar removed or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exactly the same drug, but it's just under a different name. And, I mean, like you say, you know, the system is now geared towards the sale of drugs and the pushing of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, all the natural remedies and things
absolutely.
Like that. You know, they've all been suppressed.
And there was something, there was a substance, I looked at Essiac. It was supposed to be a very potent cancer treatment.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, the cancer thing as well. I mean, you know, I've done a reasonable amount of research into that, and you look at cancer, it's incredible. You look at the story of Harry Hoxie in the 30s and how he was in prison for treating people and curing cancer, you know, and the people that he treated and cured came to him while he was in prison and gave him meals and brought him food. And the Hoxie story, if you haven't researched it, go and read up about it. It's fantastic. It's amazing.
Really?
It's amazing. Maurice Fishbein, the head of FDA, it's in the court record. He admitted in the court record, I think it was 1939, 1929, I can't remember the date, but it's in the court record that Fishbein, the head of the FDA at that time, said he knew that the Hoxie treatment was a cure for external cancers. That they were concerned about the internal cancers that he was treating or something. And that's what it says in the court record of Hoxie's case. The FDA knew that his treatment was a cure for cancer. I mean, you know, and like you say, Essiac is another example, and there's the cribriazin and glyoxylide, you know, other treatments with concentrated aloe vera, Roy Rice's work. Rice also cured cancer.
I was about to mention that.
On and on, and in this country, and this is something you probably don't know, and I only found this out about 6 months ago, in this country, there was a law passed in 1939, and it's called the Cancer Act.
Okay.
In this country, in Great Britain, it is illegal for anyone outside the medical profession to say that they have cured cancer. So why do you have a law saying that it's illegal for somebody outside the medical profession to claim that they've cured cancer?
Well, we have these things recently about maybe the past couple weeks. There's something, I guess apparently it happens all across this country, maybe even the world. It's called a Relay for Life, and it's just a kind of an event, a little kind of a big party type of atmosphere, and it's supposed to raise money for cancer, but it's going to the established pharmaceutical and... you know, it's just amazing.
That's
yeah, I had written Royal Raymond Reich down. Yes, I remember something looking into him, how he was saying that also, viruses and bacterial substances are, you know, these are crystalline structures, and that every crystalline structure, if it's irradiated with a proper electromagnetic frequency, it can be destroyed. So he would say the patient, whatever problem they would have, he would figure out what type of frequency they needed, and they would be cured, you know. And then, of course, he was demonized, and, you know, it's just...
That's right, yeah. I mean, it's a pattern, you know. Wilhelm Reich is another one. Wilhelm Reich looked at orgone energy and the healing properties of that. And then he got into the sort of cloudbusters as well. That's another interesting story. And what happened to Reich? Well, he ended up in prison, and then he was found hanging in his cell the day before he was due to be released, and that was in the 60s. So... And Reich is the only scientist in U.S. history to have his books burned.
Wow.
His books were burned.
And you know,
couple,
well, I was saying it's two. I think it was January 7, I had guest Dr. Lynn Tenpenny, and she has quite a few things going. You can find some lectures of hers. She's pointing about out the absurdities of vaccines and how vaccinations are autism. You know, and she just logically, she's a doctor. She's she just points these things out as common sense. And like you were saying before, you know, you don't have to be a PhD to grasp these things. You know, you can accept the research of people who are experts, and just the logic and the reasoning. You know, and one thing like TB, TB's, if you get enough sunshine, you know, TB will not survive. You know, it's just. You know, you can go.
Exactly.
On and on.
Yeah, I mean, the vaccine thing as well. I mean, just basic things like, you know, I say to people, if you go and buy some food, you know, you look on the packet and see what's in it. You know, mm-hmm. check. I mean, I check for aspartame now. I don't know about you.
Oh, absolutely. Do not take
that. Yeah, you know, I go and check for aspartame.
No.
I mean,
causes lupus.
Pardon?
For one thing, it causes lupus. I guess that's mainly in women, but
right.
it's deadly. It's a neurotoxin.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, even my 11-year-old daughter, she checks for aspartame now, you know, when she gets things. And, you know, but for the vaccines, you don't say to the doctor, come on, then, where's the list of ingredients? What's in this
exactly.
vaccine?
Exactly.
You just have it, you stick your arm out and they stick it in and away you go. You don't bat an eyelid.
Mercury, formaldehyde.
Yeah. Retroviruses,
the term is attenuated virus, which means as well, it's not really alive, it's just sort of kind of half dead or something.
Yeah,
it's like, what?
Yeah.
You know, and the explosion in autism. You know, where did that just come from? There didn't used to be such a thing. You know, I mean, and I remember, the one thing I remember about Dr. Tenpenny's conversation she had with me was that I was like, well, where did this all start? Where did the whole idea of this start? And it was something about the milkmaids were not getting, I think, I'm not sure if you remember this.
Smallpox.
So then.
The cowpox that they were exposed to, yeah.
So they would cut open, I guess, the lymph glands of a cow or something. They would drain this pus, they would drain these things out of a cow, and then, I guess, you know, cut the person and mix this substance from the cow. I mean, it's evil. That's insane. Mm. Why would you do that, especially cross species? I mean, it's just everything. This is so.
That was Edward Jenner, Edward Jenner.
I don't know.
I mean, that's where the word vaccine comes from, I believe, because you know, in Latin, I think it's vacus is a cow. French is la vache, isn't it?
Really?
So that's where vaccine comes from. I think that's correct. That's where the word comes from.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah, and this whole idea of germs has also been challenged by certain, you know, fringe researchers. And that, you know, I think as Rife said, that you can target infection in different ways, and also the body has the ability to heal itself of everything.
Absolutely.
And you just need to sort of trigger it in the right way, and it will cure itself, you know. And I think that, you know, the emotional state of somebody, as we know, I mean, everyone knows
absolutely
that a huge effect on health. Huge effect.
No question.
You know?
That is so. I can recall as a child, you know, we'd go to graveyards and, like, you know, here are the ancestors or whatever, and you see things. Any graveyard, you see people that have been together for, you know, decades, or people have been together a whole life. One dies, in some cases, almost immediately. I mean, certainly within a very short space of time, the next one has died. Because if you do not want to live, you're not going to live. You know? So, I mean, that's what you're saying. You know, the immune system is a lot of it's mental, or maybe most of it, maybe all of it, you know? Now, one thing, okay, now, we're kind of getting, we have a couple minutes left. I want to get off here. I don't want to but now, one thing, I like, next week I'm going to have a gentleman, Cremo. I'm sure I think you're aware of his work. I have Michael Cremo back. He was on 4 or 5 years ago, and he's a very fascinating individual, and we're talking about his work. But maybe come back in a little bit, and a couple weeks or so, and we can talk about, we've rehashed, and I think we did a, you know, pretty good job, and, you know, if you want to, the evidence is out there. If you want to look, you should, and there it is. But, you know, maybe we can get into more positive of effects of what can be. Like, you start, your page now starts for the case for anti-gravity. And also maybe like the Orion Project. You know, like Stephen Greer? Do you know much about
that? Oh, yeah, I can talk about that.
Those types of things? You know, so, and that has been my focus, like, for a little while now, for several months. I've been trying to, you know, get into, you know, more positive topics and, you know, spirituality and things. And then I kind of hit a wall about, have you heard of Rudolf Steiner, the work of Rudolf Steiner? It's clairvoyance and it's out-of-body experiences,
okay.
And it is absolutely, it is a huge subject. And then I kind of hit a wall, how do I present this? It's like, so then I kind of got, you know, maybe I got lazy or something. I haven't had much time to do much of anything, I guess, lately with this program. But I thought maybe what I'll do now, we have just a couple minutes, but I'll play this at the bottom of your page. It's very interesting. It's Neil Armstrong on the 25th anniversary.
Okay.
Of the lunar business. Let's see here. Is it gonna use the player?
All three Apollo 11 astronauts also resigned shortly after their return. On the 25th anniversary of the event in 1994, Neil Armstrong made a rare public appearance and held back tears as he spoke these brief cryptic remarks before the next generation of taxpayers as they toured the White House.
Today we have with us a group of students among America's best. To you, we say, we have only completed a beginning. We leave you much that is undone. There are great ideas undiscovered, breakthroughs available to those who can remove one of truth's protective layers.
And that's interesting. One of truth's protective layers. You know, it was about maybe
very interesting.
Almost 5 years ago, Bart Sobral joined us, and at that time, I think he just had, that was a clip from Moon Movie. Go to moonmovie.com.
That's right.
And now he's got, I haven't been there in a little while, but he's got a huge number of videos. Very interesting. And, of course, maybe a lot of this is circumstantial. But, you know, the bottom line is the NASA's own video itself that shows them, you watch, it's unmistakable. It shows them faking a shot. They're supposed to be circumnavigating the moon, and it shows them obviously in lower Earth orbit, which is where they never left lower Earth orbit. And the main thing also is, you can go on and on about this, but the Van Allen radiation belts, which are, I think there have been quite a few, maybe a dozen or maybe more, of people that have been on our space shuttle that have actually succumbed to cancers, because if you get close enough, you know, radiation, you know.
Deadly,
it's not good. It kills you. All right, well, Andrew Johnson, thank you very much for joining us, and maybe we can come back in a couple weeks or something.
Sure, yeah, just come to me any time.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, sir.
Okay, take care. Great.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
Okay, now, sorry about that. We're supposed to have a guest, and that's why it went a bit longer. We were going to have some live music, but I guess maybe couldn't work it out. And Andrew Johnson, checktheevidence.com, Dr. Judy Wood, drjudywood.com. And then, of course, if you didn't hear the disclaimer at the top of my program, the standard disclaimer is that the views expressed on this program are solely those of the individuals who are providing them, and there is no intention either expressed or implied to suggest that WSHC 89.7 Shepherd University or the state of West Virginia is responsible for in any way, shape, or form for what is presented on this program. And I guess I was going to, I had an idea of trying to be cute, when Mr. Johnson was already on the phone. I was going to say something, you know, if you believe in the 9/11 fable, please do not listen because you may suffer some damage that may be up into including death. Okay, well, see ya. And that's right. Next week, Michael Cremo. And I believe the site is mcremo.com.
WSHC, Shepherdstown.